everything is hunky and dory. Everything is ship and shape. Everything is tip and top.
Okay.
I'm thinking. That's how I feel anyway.
As long as you feel good about it. Then I do. Where you lead, I will follow.
I do.
On the old Pencast.
The old Pencast.
That's right.
126 of them.
Yes, indeed. Sound like the beaver from, or the groundhog from Winnie the Pooh?
Maybe.
What's his name?
I don't know.
He's got a really,
knowing Winnie the Pooh is probably, really whistly, his name is probably just groundhog.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because like some of them are just like.
What is his name? I don't know. We're not like technically.
He's just got like rabbit and owl, but then Eeyore gets his own name. Why don't they call him Pooh. Donkey?
Yeah, Piglet. Like that.
Yeah, it's like what's so special about Eeyore and Pooh? They get names.
Winnie the Pooh. What is his name? Groundhog?
I don't know. I don't even remember a groundhog.
I think he's a groundhog. Yeah, him.
What's his name?
He's got like big buck teeth and. What is his name? What is the groundhog's name on Winnie the Pooh?
Gopher.
All he's right. A gopher. Okay.
So Pooh and Eeyore are the only people that get only animals that get names.
Tigger.
Oh, okay. Well, kind of, I guess. Yeah.
He's.
But still, yeah. I wonder. Yeah, that's
pretty
weird.
Lazy. Pretty lazy writing. I think.
Guess so.
Have you seen Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey?
No, but I've heard it was.
I haven't either.
Heinous. I'm not going to waste my time with that. I've got movies I actually want to watch.
Fair enough. All right, you ready to do it?
Yes.
Welcome, everybody, to episode number 126 of the Goulet Pencast, where fountain pens are still a thing. I am Brian Goulet.
I'm Drew Brown.
And we're here from Goulet Pens to deliver this casual and informal, tangential and extraneous, superfluous and extemporaneous fountain pen show, where we talk about what's going on at the Goulet Pen Company and in our fountain pen lives. In today's show, I'm back, replacing other Brian. But hope you all enjoyed your time with him. Seems like you did, based on the comments. I'm here because I was out of town, and I will talk about that more.
Good, I was going to ask you about that.
And I'm not sick, but my voice is a little lower than usual, which I like.
You talked a lot, I'm sure.
I was talking nonstop. I was at a work conference, so lots and lots and lots of talking.
How many times did you explain what a fountain pen was, roughly?
I don't have to explain it all that much anymore.
All right.
This is a group that knows me pretty well.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I still have to explain it plenty, though. Yeah, pretty much everywhere I go. It's like a... Just a part of the thing, but it's nice when I travel because I can have a pen on me and people be like, fountain pen. I'm like, yeah, it's a thing. Okay, here, let me just show you.
Yeah.
And then they get it. As opposed to people who sell like motorcycle tires or, you know, whatever.
They can't just whip one of those out.
It's a little tougher.
Yeah.
But most people know what motorcycles are, so maybe they don't have to. Anyway, today we're going to be talking about how many pens that we carry while traveling. How timely is that? How we know when we have too many pens. If that's even possible. I'm not sure what I have to share on that front. What are the criteria for a Goulet exclusive product? A little inside baseball there. Some of y'all might enjoy that. What do we recommend for Disney-inspired pens? So kind of going off of, what have we done before? We did the...
Done Office.
What did we do? The Office? And you did some Marvel stuff? Or
yeah,
did
we some, did. We've done Marvel. You did something we've done Avengers. We've done Office. And then we've done Mario. And then we've done...
Did we?
I think so.
I don't feel like I participated in all Mario? These.
I don't know.
I don't remember doing Mario.
We've done a few.
I don't remember doing most of them. I don't remember most of what we talked about in all the previous pencasts. So, yeah, well, that's why we record them, so that y'all can see it. We're also apparently going to be sharing my Apple Cinnamon Cheerio story that you talked about a couple weeks
Someone
ago.
Someone asked.
Yep, and we'll do a spotlight on the Lamy Lux. Or LX.
Or LX.
However you want to pronounce it. Lix, Lux, Lux.
Let's not do Lorx. Lix.
Lix. Lix sounds weird. I don't know why it would be Lix. Lux. Lux, LX, whatever it is. Yeah, and then we'll have obviously plenty of nonsense to talk about. And we'll kick off the episode with some feedback.
All right. Our first feedback nugget is from CM Brez. I normally listen to the podcast, a pencast, on Spotify, but there wasn't a new one there yesterday. So I was glad to see that you did, in fact, release one yesterday. Yay! That was my fault. I'm glad that you did find the YouTube video, which is where this comment was coming from, but I forgot to click the little button that changes it from private to public on Friday. So I went ahead and...
You published it. You just published it privately.
Yes. So, yeah. It was there, but not. So my friendly podcast listeners out there, I apologize here now in audio form as you take this one in, hopefully on time.
Secretly, Drew was just testing to see if y'all actually listen. So he didn't publish it to see how much of a an upswell of demand there was for it.
That was it. There were at least two. There were at least two people that mentioned it to me. So I consider that, you know,
loyal audience. There we go. We'll take it.
I was just telling you, I want to help at least two people. So there you go.
Yeah. If it's just one of you, sorry. Go elsewhere.
Yeah. And then a couple of you also mentioned that when we showed Brian Kay's Frankenpen abomination later in the show, where he had an entire ink sample attached to the back of a Safari grip section, we neglected to cut away to the, you know, my cell phone footage. So sorry about that. I'll put in a picture or something here so you can see a little bit closer up. But yeah, it's offensive anyway. I don't know why you would want to see it. And Jack Sanders says, I was unaware of scented inks entirely, and now I need a noir inspiration, which is one of the scented inks we reviewed. Reading off the scent description, and I go, oh, I'd wear that. And hey, given my track record, I probably will be wearing it. Meaning spilling it, which I thought was pretty clever. That one was the most pleasant one. That one actually smelled like a cologne. It was a very nice, pleasant, full-bodied smell.
Yeah, you can just take some and dab a little like underneath your jawline there.
Yeah, and it's like a bronzer as well. All right. Breezy Veezy says, I cannot believe the green weenie came up in conversation on here. I had one growing up in Pittsburgh, possibly, obviously, but I think we tossed it ages ago because it was already like 20 years old by the time I got my grubby baby hands on it in the early 90s. Dang, now I wish I still had it. Do you know what the green weenie is, Brian?
I have no idea. I haven't seen, to be fair, I haven't seen the episode yet.
I wasn't planning on doing a fun fact, but someone mentioned a Birmingham ink called green weenie.
Yeah, okay.
And I had to look it up, and it brought me into a fun fact, which, you know, my grandfather had called his boat the Green Weenie, and I never knew why.
Okay.
The Green Weenie is essentially like a pickle rattle, a green hot dog rattle that was shaken at Pittsburgh Pirates fan or Pittsburgh Pirates to bless them, or the enemies of the Pittsburgh Pirates to vex them.
Oh.
It was like a talisman of juju.
Interesting.
Good or evil.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it was like, it was a green hot dog rattle.
Okay.
It's a green weenie.
That is interesting.
Yeah. That was a great fun fact.
That is definitely a random fact.
Yes.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, I got some feedback as well. This is from Knit Sista. Loved the show. I always enjoy Brian Kay's display of the Frankenpens he creates. I am in awe of all of you and enjoy listening to all of you and your downtime activities. I sometimes laugh out loud on the New York City subway. As a wife, I would love to have Rachel and Shannon come on sometime to talk about their reactions to your antics. Keep the pencast coming. The longer, the better. I don't know if Rachel would have any reactions to our antics on the pencast because I think she's maybe watched 15 minutes collectively of a pencast.
Yeah, sometimes Shannon's watches the What's Happening session to kind of view my opinion on our previous weekend.
Right.
But
they would have opinions for sure.
They would definitely
have opinions about what we talk about here because they get enough of us all the time. So they're not like watching this to see what's going on.
Yeah.
They're there real time as
you could ask them, you could submit questions about Disney Dreamlight Valley and they would have plenty to talk about.
They would both have things to talk about there.
Yeah.
Yes. Animal Crossing, New Horizons and all kinds of stuff. Rachel's got a new game, Fae Farm, I think it's called. It seems like all of them mashed together with slightly different characters and slightly less awkward noises coming from the characters. Because definitely with Animal Crossing, with Legend of Zelda, the Breath of the Wild?
Both of them. Yeah, whenever you talk to somebody,
Yeah.
Some of the noises,
particularly from some of the like fairies and things like that, I'm just kind of like, it sounds like not really a children's game sounds there. If you're just like hearing it in the background, like I often am. But anyway, we've talked about it. I don't know if it'll ever happen.
We have. We've talked about Rachel and Shannon. We've talked about Archer and Ellie. And
Ellie wants to be on. She asks me about it constantly.
We definitely would like to.
So we'll make that happen like, somehow.
Yeah. It just takes work.
It is. Yeah, we'll see what we can do.
Yeah.
We'll see what we can do. Okay. but we'll definitely keep going long. Okay, this is from how do you pronounce this? Puto Chuchinta. Forgive me if I mispronounce that. Brian actually does sound like Brian sometimes. I was playing this in the background and could have sworn it was Brian talking. Well, it was Brian talking.
We got a lot of comments like this.
About, like, Brian being like me.
Yeah.
Well.
Some person even said y'all look the same, you know, from far apart.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know. But a lot of folks definitely saw or heard similarities in your tone. They were in your register.
Both pretty couple of good-looking, knowledgeable guys.
That's as a compliment. It must have been that, yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, and he's been here a while, so it's like, yeah, we have like a hive mind that all kind of, we all share each other's knowledge and stuff.
He was also repeating some of your most oft-talked about topics as well, so that might have had something to do with it.
We definitely both have completely coincidentally have very similar hobbies and interests.
Yeah.
Okay, one more. The Jumping Nomad says, wow, what a pencast. You guys answered two of my questions. The pencast is always a treat, but this one, you guys were literally just talking to me. And then Brian showing that gorgeous VAC 700 with the quill nib on it. The VAC 700 is one of my favorite looking pens, and the quill nib is my favorite nib. I might just try that conversion. Well, there you go. Frankenpenning some nibs.
There were no fewer than two people that said that they had already spoken to Brian and had done that.
That's
and
awesome.
Love it. So I'm like, oh, God, Brian, what are you doing?
Oh, man, that's pretty fun. Cool. Well, I'm glad y'all enjoyed having him on, and we'll, you know, keep on bringing him back, and as well as others on the team. We got a few more that will line up for the future, but cool. Glad to know that you don't miss me that much, because then I can be gone sometimes and not feel guilty about it.
That is true.
That's actually a good thing. All right. Let's move on to the segment of new stuff. All right. We got some new stuff. I'm going to talk about it, not having any much of an idea of what's happening. Just for a timeline here. So I was gone Tuesday through Saturday of this past week. And because of some conflicts, we had to move this to a Monday early afternoon recording. So I've had a couple of hours to prep things and catch up on like a whole week's worth of Slacks and emails. So I'm going to talk as much as I know about these new things that are coming. I think I'm pretty okay on these ones.
Yeah.
We have a new pen from Bennu. This is a new Bennu Euphoria, which has been a hot model. We've done a bunch of exclusives. This one's not an exclusive, but it is a limited edition called Easter Bunny. And it's pretty cool. It's limited to 100 pens because it's one of these hand-painted dealios that looks so cool. So when the hand-painted stuff first started to come out, I was like, oh my gosh, this might be like the one hand-painted thing that ever comes out. Because that's really all we've seen.
Yeah, and we didn't expect that have as many available to us.
Right.
For a while, they were only available through Bennu Direct.
Right.
And then they started hiring more micro painters, and now they're offering it to retailers, and we're getting a surprisingly good amount.
Like rolling out a bunch of them.
Yeah.
They've done some at like all the major holidays.
We had one for Christmas, we had one for Valentine's Day, and now we're having another one for Easter.
Yeah, and a couple of spring ones too. We've had some bird ones, and
we had the Draco Darling too. That was just kind of like a random dragon, or maybe it was the Year of the Dragon.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So they're just cranking them out for the holidays.
Love it. So that pen is $280, so it's definitely cost more, but that's because it is more labor to do, and these artists need to get paid. So that's kind of cool. It looks really nice, though, if you're into Easter or bunnies, or the Easter Bunny in particular. So go check that out. We will not have them for probably all that long. And then we have the new Safaris, the Cliff and Blackberry, Violet Blackberry, Pink Cliff, those are the pens, but we will have the ink to match the pen in a gift set. So it'll come with the pen, bottle, and cartridges, and a converter. So that'll be $44.99. You get that whole bundle together, and you'll be good to go. And if you have not seen any of those yet, we did do a video on those with the pens and the ink all together, so you can check it out and see what is going on. And I think that's all I've got for right now, because we've launched a ton so far.
It's a pretty light week, yeah.
We have a lighter week this week, and then it'll pick back up later in the month.
The only other thing I have is Esterbrook is coming at you with a new SD model. Mm-hmm. If you'll remember, they did a stealth black. They did like an all-black matte pen, and it was cool. It was lovely. It was neat. The most interesting thing about that, though, was that Raven Black is what they called it, I believe.
Yeah.
The most interesting thing about that, though, it came with a regular cartridge converter pen and a piston, which is not a thing Esterbrook has been doing, mm-hmm. but they did. But it wasn't just a regular twist piston. It was a pump piston, kind of like a Con 70 converter, but built into the pen. This one, now ready for your consumption, is the Winter White SD, both in cartridge converter form and that really cool piston form. So obviously the cartridge converter one is going to be more affordable at $175.50. And then the piston version is $247.50. So you can choose what sort of filling mechanism you want. Obviously the ease of the cartridge converter is nice and easy and familiar if you just want that white, beautiful acrylic pen. But that filler on the piston button is really neat. My favorite thing about that is that I have seen modern-ish pens with a brass kind of button piston, and they always feel a little grindy. Like, you can definitely hear them. Esterbrook has manufactured this pen really, really smoothly, so it's a, you don't even hear it. It's a smooth, non-grindy, non-scrapey operation.
Yeah.
Just a delight. I was really impressed when I saw that at a pen show for the first time.
It's awesome.
So those are both available now.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Love me some pumpy pistons.
I've heard that about you.
On the Con 70, because that's like the only other pen that has it at all that I can think of. But anyway, that's what we got for new stuff. You can check out new arrivals and coming soon stuff on GearThePens.com to keep up with it. And we got a couple of quick company updates. All right, so this will be fairly brief because, again, I don't really have any idea what's going on right now. And we had so much going on with Lamy and stuff the last couple of weeks. We're kind of cool with things just being a little chill at the moment. But we do have a mental health half day on Friday as this publishes on March 15th. So you'll probably have already seen this video by the time that has already passed.
I'm going to publish it and leave.
There you go.
What should I do?
What should you do? Do you have any plans?
I don't. I realized we were having this as I saw your notes in here. Yeah, so I need to figure out something mentally healthy for me to do.
Yeah. Think about it. Or maybe you can get some, you can't get some suggestions because by the time this publishes, it'll have already happened. But I don't know. Maybe it'll still just like make its way out there in the universe and will have impacted you somehow. That's impossible because it'll happen after you've already done it. Never mind. I don't know what's going on. I don't have any specific plans myself, but I will give it some thought as well.
Maybe I'll just go to Waffle House and then head home and play video games.
That sounds like a mentally healthy situation.
Amazing. Yeah.
Do that. I think the weather's supposed to be nice. It's going to be like in the 70s here in Virginia all week after today. Today's kind of gross, but tomorrow it'll get up in the 70s. So you can not be outside because you don't do that.
I tried to today. I was actually, I went home on a lunch break, heated up a bowl of chili, and I was going to sit outside. But my dogs, they just eat random things in the backyard.
Oh.
And I'm just sitting there trying to enjoy my chili. I'm just like, stop it, stop it. Hey, stop, stop, stop it. I'm like, this is dumb. I'm going to go back inside.
Interesting.
You're just misbehaving.
You know what I saw when I was at the airport coming back on Saturday?
Corgi.
Somebody had a dog straight up pooping in the airport.
Oh, my God.
Just laying turds. That's right disgusting. There in the walking path.
Oh, come on. Like,
well, first off, I was going to be like, you're going to pick that up, right? But then I was like, there's still going to be, like, smear, like, remnants of it. Like, is he going to, like, disinfect that or whatever?
God.
I was just like, I mean, people have animals in the airports. Like, I would assume you have a plan for that.
Yeah.
But I don't have a pet, so I don't really have to think about that kind of stuff. But it was just like, you're just not expecting to see that in an airport. Dog just, you know.
Yeah.
You know, that face that dogs make.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes they look right at you, too.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a self-defense thing. They're vulnerable, and they need to know that you've got their back.
Yeah.
So they'll stare at you while they poop.
Yeah. I mean, that's the same face I make when I poop. You just don't see it.
Oh, cool. Well, I'm here for you, buddy.
Gross. Why are we talking about this? Anyway, and then we have somebody that's having a special birthday next week, too.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah.
My grandmother.
Turning the big 4-0.
My grandmother texted me today, asked when I wanted to come over and have our little family celebration and what I wanted to eat. And I said, okay, we'll just do it on Wednesday, on my actual birthday, on the 20th. And then I said, she didn't actually ask what I wanted, I just told her, I'm like, hey, can you make apple pancakes? Because she used to make apple pancakes for us whenever we would stay over her house. And it's been a long time. And I said, Mimi, I want some of your apple pancakes.
Hey, nice.
She's like, okay, well, that'll surprise a few people. But she's really all good. For it. She's like, okay, that sounds great. Perfect. Let's do that.
I mean, it's your birthday. You get whatever the heck you want.
So my mom funny. And my aunts, they're probably going to be like, wait, we're having what?
Oh, man. That's so funny. Is this like for dinner? Dinner time?
Yeah.
Whatever, man. Yeah. Brenner's the best.
Absolutely.
It's even better when it's a surprise.
100%.
You don't know what's happening. That's awesome. And then I'll get to make fun of how old you are for a month.
For a month.
Until I turn old as well.
And then Rachel will be able to make fun of you for a month.
Yep. Not a month. 2 weeks, basically.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
17. She's 17 days younger than me.
Oh, wow. I thought it was more than that.
No. It's pretty close. But anyway, we'll both be old here pretty soon. That's all we got for company updates. Let's get in some Q&A, shall we? All right. I'm ready to go, Drew. I've been thinking about questions.
I'm sure you have not. All right. Well, I will I'll softball you on this one. Holoshan asks you, how many pens do you usually carry when traveling? Mm-hmm. When I travel, I also bring my journal. While I have a few favorites to bring with me for long-form writing, I will sometimes try to bring all of them, 15 so far, and if they don't fit in my rickshaw koozie, I'd love to hear your thoughts. Oh, no. And they all don't fit in my rickshaw koozie. Oh, okay. I'd love to hear your thoughts around this. Thanks, Brian and Drew, for all you do. Well, thank you. We will continue to do all we do, which is not much, but it's good to know it's enough. Brian, you just recently traveled.
I did. I'm rifling through my goods right now.
You're going to be able to say exactly what you did. Yeah. I'll just start off by saying, while Brian gets all his stuff undone, I don't really travel with my pens. I'm a very utilitarian writer. I write when I need to, and I like writing, but I don't do a lot of journaling, and I definitely don't journal when I'm on vacation or anything like that. I have enough random junk to bring, and unless I'm going to a pen show. I mean, I always bring pens to pen shows, but
yeah, you got to.
For the most part, I don't do a lot of traveling with my pens. I'll bring a Retro 51, and that's about it.
I traveled with more pens than I realized.
I see that.
I had some buried in here underneath all the Cliff Bars and Rubik's Cubes.
I usually do take a pen with me if I'm going to like some place where I think I might be asked about pens, though.
Yeah.
That's always fun.
Yeah.
Because I like talking about pens.
Yeah. Do you?
I do. I just, if I've got spare time, like when I'm on a trip, like I usually am sleeping or eating. And
fair enough.
Yeah.
I guess it's different if it's like a vacation versus.
Yeah. Like that's really the only time I travel. For me, travel is either pen shows and I bring stuff or vacations where I don't bring stuff.
That makes sense. So I just traveled. I went to New Orleans. I've been there before. I went there 5 years ago for the very same type of conference that I just went to. So that was cool. I will talk about that more in a minute. But I feel like, you know, for different types of travel, I will bring different types of things. You know, if it's something like a vacation, I'm not bringing a lot. You know, not that I vacate all that much.
But like, I just went to Disney. I didn't bring any pens to Disney. Like, that's just...
Yeah, you're not, like,
God, no.
Taking any
I'm
notes.
Ending the day exhausted. Yeah. I don't need to write anything. I'm just uploading all my footage to the cloud and going to bed. Like, that
makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did just travel. So I went to like a non-pen show, distributor, manufacturer, you know, tour, visit, whatever. I'll bring more pens to those type things because that's like work pen specific.
Yeah, you were outside of the industry.
Yeah. But this was a work conference. So it was like, I will be talking about pens sometimes to those who ask, and I need to take notes at said conference. But so it's kind of a reduced capacity of what I would bring.
Yeah, obviously, if I know I'm going to go to a place where I'm taking notes, then yeah, absolutely, I'm bringing a pen.
Exactly. And that's what this was. This was like a multi-day conference, lots of networking, lots of taking notes, breakout sessions, ideation, that type of stuff. So I used my traveler's notebook. Which I've had this one. This is the olive one, which the OG version of it, which is a little darker than the one.
Well worn.
Is I think partly it's darker because it's gotten all grimy with my oils. And I use Goulet notebooks inside of them. I keep several notebooks. I keep some lined ones and some dot ones. The lined ones are for like my personal stuff. The dot ones are for my business stuff.
Oh.
That way I can tell what the heck is going on in each notebook. And I usually have three notebooks in here because, you know, I have notebook challenges because I like to try different notebooks and then I write different things in them all the time. And then I can't ever find what I wrote because I'm mixing and matching all the time. So this is my one that's like more of my go-to. So when I keep three of them in there, usually one of them is the most recent one that I have filled up so that if I need to like go back and reference something that I just, you know, did previously, I have that as kind of a reference for a while until I get into the new notebook. More time passes, and then I kind of archive the third one. So at least one dot, at least one lined, and then whichever the last one is that I filled, I leave that in there. And I did bring my Endless notebook, which is actually a larger and better format for like conferences and stuff because it's more of an A5 size. However, I already had notes from like previous visits with the same group in this notebook. So I ended up bringing both. I ended up not using this one. Plus, you know, there was like mingling events at different locations. I didn't want to bring a backpack. This is just a bit much, even in my cargo shorts, to carry. This one I can like stick in a back pocket. I can stick it in my cargo shorts pocket. And it's just convenient like that. So I ended up sticking with the traveler's notebook, even though it was a little narrower, you know, for the actual note taking and stuff like that. But I just did a lot of bullet points. So that was good. And then I ended up bringing several different pens, some of which I forgot that I had in my backpack. So technically I brought them, but I did not use them. I had a couple of Varsities in here, I think because I shot a video about the Varsities not too long ago and I meant to bring these back home. I put them in my backpack and forgot to ever take them out.
Were either of those the one you refilled on camera?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, that one's still here. These are just ones I was going to bring home and let my kids mess with.
Oh,
so
gotcha.
I have those. So it's the green and the purple one. And then I also have my main note-taking one was my Twisby 580 ALR Prussian Blue that I have inked up with an ink. I forgot what color is in here because it's been in here a while.
Blue Water Ice.
It's a blue. It could be Blue Water Ice. I don't know if it is, though, to be honest with you. I really don't remember what color it is. I have too many blues that are too similar, and I've had this ink in here for a while. But I do like that pen. I especially like this pen for when I go to conferences where I'm talking to other business people that like may or may not care about pens at all, because I always have to explain like what is a fountain pen. And it's nice because it's demonstratory and I can show what's going on. So that is cool. And I can show the ink sloshing around and people get it. I also have a Lamy 2000 rollerball, I think, because I just threw that in my backpack and it's always there as my backup in case I forget to ever clean out any of my pens. I've got a pen that will work and be a nice writing experience. And then I brought a couple others that were thoughtful. Like I have my Pilot Custom Ryushi. I did not bring this one, though. I left here. Oh. But I like to carry it around in my daily here. So I put it back in there, but I did not bring it with me on the trip. But I do have my Lamy 2000 with a fine nib on it and some kind of blue ink in it. And then I have Twisby Eco. This is the what is this one called? The one with the rose gold trim. Bronze trim, sorry.
Is it indigo? No, not indigo.
Indigo.
Is it indigo?
Indigo with bronze trim.
Indigo,
yep.
Okay.
Yep. So that is cool. That's also a good pen to show people like what is going on with the ink and stuff like that. We got a little ink on the grip from the plane.
That.
Yeah, that's not too bad. I always like to see, like, I took zero precautions whatsoever in taking these on the plane. Now I see I got a little ink on the grip, so it can happen. But whatever, I'll wipe that off and it's not a big deal. The other ones, there was, like, no leaking whatsoever on any of these, so yeah, totally fine.
The 2000, okay?
The 2000, fine. Well, that one's a rollerball, so that one is perfectly fine. Yeah,
yeah, no ink on that grip.
Here, not any ink at all.
That's weird.
Whatsoever, yeah. So a little bit on the Eco, but that's interesting. Okay, and then what else was I going to talk about? How many pens do I take? So I really had like the three pens. That was like, you know, and then I had another one. I forgot about my Travelers.
Travelers, yeah.
So I had that little guy, which I had to remember because I always carry a pocket knife. It's like every time I fly, I'm like, I have to take the knife out of my pocket. So my little Travelers pen, which I have Diamine Red Dragon in there, which I recently cleaned and refilled. So I had it, I mean, I think I had the same cartridge that I'd refilled in there for maybe 3 or 4 months. and I had not yet gone through the whole cartridge because it's just like, I always have other pens around, but that one is just nice when I need to sign a little thing. So cleaned that out, took it with me on the trip. Let me see if that one did anything crazy on the plane. Nope, it literally just looks fine.
I've only ever had internal piston pens do anything on planes.
Yeah, cartridge converters really aren't going to do it. I've never had that. There's not enough air in there to really cause anything. Yeah, it's like bigger ones like this, like where it's like half inked or whatever.
But it looks like your Eco is more full than that one is.
I think it was about the same, the Eco is. Well, maybe not. Yeah, a little bit of, it was about halfway here. It's really clinging to the.
Oh, okay. It's hard to tell.
So it's got a decent amount of air in there. It's maybe a little more than half filled. But yeah, that's the thing. And I guess that one, I don't, you know, I think that happened on the way back. But I had two legs, so it was like four ups and downs. Yeah. So, you know, it makes sense that something might happen on some of these pens. Yeah, so that's pretty good for traveling for me. You know, if I'm going to a pen show, I will carry more pens. I'll do like more 20, 30 pens, and I'll bring like a good range. You know, I always try to carry like my original Custom 74 and, you know, stuff like that people kind of know me for. But I don't want to bring pens like that on a work conference trip because if I lose my bag or somebody steals it or whatever, I want it to be like fairly replaceable pens.
Yeah.
But also ones that like do a good job representing what nice fountain pens are. So, yeah, there's that. And then the only other time that I'll bring more pens with me is if I'm going to visit my in-laws or spending like, you know, more than a couple of days away from home, because that is sometimes an opportunity for me to clean some pens. So it's like, oh, if everybody's just kind of around the house and we don't really have like a planned activity and I can sneak away for a little bit, I will clean some pens. Not always though, but sometimes I do. And that is helpful. So like Christmas time or whatever, you know, when I'm like going up for a week and it's like, all right, what the heck are we going to do for a week? I'll bring that just in case. So that's time when I'm bringing more pens that I'm not going to be showing people. It's just to do something with.
Yeah. Like I'll bring, I have a separate pen case with pens that I are happy to trade. So those sit in a separate pen case. I'll usually bring those to pen shows just in case I see something.
Yeah. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. Cool. That's pretty much it for me. Love to hear what y'all have to say about your pen travel things, how thoughtful you are about it. You know, do you bring 15 pens with you everywhere you go? I would not judge you because currently I'm carrying around 40 pens around in my backpack because, again, I have ones I need to clean. I keep bringing them back and forth from home to work. And, yeah.
As always, even if I did carry, you know, inked up pens with me, there would ever only be three. There would never be more than three. So
you're sticking to it, man.
Yeah.
Respect.
Well,
respect.
I'm always validated because whenever I have to clean my three pens, I'm like, this sucks. I hate this. I don't want to ever do this more than three instances at a time.
Mm. Yeah, like, there's definitely a limit to the.
I've even thought about like maybe I should do two at a time. I hate cleaning pens so much.
Well, you know, you have to clean the same number of pens no matter how many you carry, right?
No, because I never exhaust all three of them. Like if I only carried two,
yeah,
I would. It's not like I would have to carry for, you know, it's not like I would empty them faster because I have fewer inked up. I wait until I've exhausted one and then I switch out all three.
Yeah, I guess I'm rarely exhausting all of the ink in them. They're usually drying out before I need to clean them.
Oh, no, none of mine dry out. But
yeah, so, I mean, I guess theoretically if you're using them all.
So you said, like, what do you mean by dry out? Like all the ink in the converter goes away?
Maybe not that.
Okay.
That would be pretty extreme.
Just dry out to the point where like
dry where it's like, oh, it's gotten all like crusty.
I need to.
It's not like
clean before.
It's not like writing properly anymore, and I forgot what ink I put in it. Yeah. And yeah, that's usually, you know, a couple of months goes by, I haven't taken good notes on what I filled with what, and it's like, okay, I think it's time. I don't remember when I last filled this pen. That's probably a good sign that it's time to clean it out. All right, Drew, I got a question for you.
Yeah, this one kind of goes. Rob. It's a nice segue.
Rob Taggart. Yep.
Hey, Rob.
How do you know when you have too many pens? Gasp. Rob wrote gasp. How do you pick just three to use each week? Looking at you, Drew. Especially if you have a lot of special or limited editions, and it's hard to give those away or sell them to make room for new ones. That is a good question.
Well, I will say right now, I already feel like I have too many because I recently bought a 40 pen case, the Esterbrook.
That's
canvas
right.
pen case,
yeah.
And I'm like, this feels like how many pens I should have,
and I
filled it all up, and I had more, and I'm like, ah, this is not what I want.
Yeah.
So I looked at it, I'm like, this is a lot of pens. And why do I need more than this? I really don't. And here's why I think, Rob, I have too many pens. Is because when I look at all of my pens, because I did that recently when I got the new case, when I looked at them all, I did not look at them and feel joy by looking at all of my pens. Oh. I felt sad because I have not been giving them all the attention that I think they deserve. Hmm. I look at them and I feel like I'm not doing right by them. I feel like I'm it's like owning a bunch of pets that you're not snuggling and cuddling all equally.
You can snuggle and cuddle 40 pens, you know?
I haven't been, though. That's the thing. Like, they haven't been able to play. And some of them are just like sitting in their little dog crate and not able to go in the backyard and run around. And I keep just, you know, letting the same ones outside to run. And some of the other ones just stay in the crate, and it makes me feel really bad. So, like, that tells me, you know what, if I don't feel like I'm using them, you know, giving them the life that I want to give them, maybe that's a sign that
you need to go to a farm upstate.
Yeah, right? Well, you know, or just to, you know, move them along to somebody that is going to appreciate them in a way that I have not been able to. So that is personally my sign. Like, what do you think when you look at your collection? Do you look at it and say, behold my stuff? Or do you look at it and be like, oh, and you see all these ones, oh, I want to write with things, I want to write with that, I want to write. You know, that's where I'm at. So that's why I feel like I need to downsize a little bit, because I do love them so much. And, you know, I need to, like, if you love something so much, sometimes you got to let it go. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where I'm at. But it really just depends on how much, you know, joy you get from, you know, having and using versus having and holding. You know, I have hobbies where I do collect things, and I am perfectly happy staring at the collection being like, yeah, my stuff. Like retro video games, I collect Super Nintendo, Nintendo, Genesis, N64, all that.
Yeah.
And I'm perfectly fine just letting them sit around. Like, it's not easy to hook up all those old gaming systems to a modern TV and switch between cartridges. And I'm like, I'm not doing that. I display a few of them and I store the rest, and that's fine. If I actually want to play something, I'll play something on, you know, an emulator or, you know, a handheld device or something I have hacked, you know. But I'm fine having them just as a collection. That brings me joy. But that's different. That's where that hobby lays in my own brain. With fountain pens, that's not where the hobby lies. For fountain pens, it's much more of a use hobby. Like, I want to be interacting with these things constantly. So it occupies a different space in my hobby brain. So, and that might be different for you. I know that for you and your collection, it's very different. Like, your collection serves a very different purpose than mine does. So it does depend on what your collection means for you and what you want your fountain pen journey to ultimately look like. So that's how I have decided. As far as how I pick my three pens, it changes a lot. But I do use arbitrary rules every time. So sometimes it's just a matter of me opening up my case and feeling guilty enough for ones that have been neglected to say, like, well, I haven't written with that for a long time. Let me show you some love, because I just feel bad. And that's the wrong reason. Like, I want to write with pens that I get excited about, not pens that I'm guilted into writing with.
You feel obliged and that's to write with?
I was the same way when I was a kid, Brian.
Really?
Like, because, you know, I'd have a bed full of stuffed animals, right? And I would have my favorites, but then there'd also be the thing, you know, at the bottom of the bed that you got from the claw machine.
Yeah.
And you're like, it's kind of scratchy. I don't want that to be like my main snuggle thing.
Yeah.
But also it's like looking at me and it's like, all right. You know, it's like
it doesn't have feelings, though.
I know, but it does. It does, though. So I'm like, all right, come here. I'm like, this sucks. It's like some scratchy Donkey Kong or something. Right, I don't know. Right. But yeah, I've always been like that. I just feel bad. So sometimes I just choose about a pen that I feel bad for. This time it was ink. I actually picked what ink I wanted to write with first. So I wanted to write with Waringal Phantom of the Opera, Robert Oster Thunderstorm, because we talked about the ink names.
Right.
I'm like, I need to write with Thunderstorm soon.
Yeah.
And then Robert Oster Honeybee. So.
Okay. So you wanted the pens to match the inks that you chose.
Somewhat, yeah.
Or at least complement.
Yeah. So the pen that I put Thunderstorm in is this Scribo pen with a nice gray blue ink or gray blue resin. And that just like matches perfectly with the ink. It's just a dead ringer. So that's how I picked that one.
Okay.
I hadn't yet inked up my, you know, crazy garage fountain pens, Urushi Kakuno yet. Yeah. So this one has a bunch of colors. This one has brown and purple and blue and sparkly. So this one can really, you can put anything in this. So this one I did Wearing Gold Phantom of the Opera.
Okay.
And then I wanted Robert Oster Honeybee. So I wanted a nice, it's a gold color. So I thought that my, was this Apollo Visconti Mirage Mythos would be a great choice for Honeybee. So
yeah,
I,
that's good.
I found the gold ink and I picked a pen that I thought had a nice gold vibe. Also, this pen has a medium nib, which I have fewer of, but Honeybee is a great shader, so I wanted a larger nib for that.
Yeah.
So this time, Rob, I started with the ink and then matched the ink to pens that I thought worked well with it.
Definitely.
But, you know, the craziest thing happened. When I inked these up, I picked up this Kakuno, Brian, wrote with it, and my feeling was, you know what? I'd be good with just a Kakuno. Like, it wrote it wrote that good. I am so satisfied with this crazy Urushi Kakuno that I'm like, you know what? This would be enough for me.
Is that your Highlander pen? If there could only be one?
I feel like if I did just have, like, I could write all day with a Kakuno. I could write all month with a Kakuno. It's this solid particular pen. It's fantastic.
Wow.
So I feel like if I had to, I could be one of those people that, and it makes me wonder, like, if I didn't work here, how big would my collection be? Like, if I wasn't tempted as often as I'm tempted, what would my collection look like? What kind of a hobbyist would I be? I might just have a few. I think I could probably, I think I would have 10 or fewer if I wasn't just constantly.
You're around them
in the,
all
yes,
the time.
In the bubble.
Yeah.
So.
For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely would not have anywhere near the pens that I have if I was not in this business. I don't know how many I would have if I was just, you know,
it's a
hobbyist.
It's tough.
We'll never know because that's never going to be a situation that can happen. But knowing how obsessive some of my other hobbies are, I probably wouldn't have a small collection because I don't really have a small collection of pretty much anything that I get involved in.
Yeah.
Because so it's a little different. I don't have ill feelings about the neglect that I have for my various pens.
Right.
It's not quite the same way. It's more of like, I like to have pens to reference and use because I'm a very tactile person, and my part of how I remember things is by physical objects. So I'm one of those people that like, I like to have like trinkets or something. Like if I go to a place and I have an object that I have from that place, then when I like interact with that object, I then remember being at that place. So for me, it's a little more of like, I like to have things around even if I'm not using them very much, because the very fact that I have them and see them and can lay hands on them, even if I'm not writing with a pen, I will have like associations and good feelings with that.
Yeah.
Just by it be kind of being in the collection.
I feel like you mentioned that in regards to some of the things you brought back from Japan, like the knives and the little wooden puzzle box.
Yeah.
Like you talked about that connection there that like, you know, you're bringing a little piece of it back with you.
Yeah.
I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just like the way my brain works, you know, a little bit. And then, you know, especially like with me, I'm kind of a generalist. So it's like, I like to have a diversity of experience when I get into a hobby. So with fountain pens, like even before I was really kind of in the business, so to speak, when I was trying to just learn about fountain pens, I bought all completely random brands, you know, random nib sizes. I intentionally overlapped as little as possible so that I could get a range of experiences. And it really continues to today. So it's like, very few pens, even if it's like a new model or a color exclusive or something, that I'm like, well, I know I'm going to set one of those aside. Oftentimes, if I'm trying to pick like a nib size or something like that, I will often go, well, what nib size do I not have in that pen? And I'll go for that one. Even if I don't think I would use it that often, I like to have access to it.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
I've heard that firsthand. Yeah.
And that's
especially with Twisby Ecos, like you're always trying to like, all right, what did I do last time?
And yeah, I mean, some of them, it's a little different now with like Ecos and Lamis and stuff like that, because I can swap those nibs around.
Yeah.
So it's not quite as big of a deal to me. Like once I have a number of them and I have kind of like all the nibs covered, then it's kind of like, okay, whatever. Whatever is the last one that we'll sell, I'll take that one because, you know, I don't want to take somebody else's pen that wants it quickly. So yeah, that's kind of how it rolls for me. I do not limit myself to number of pens in any way that are inked up at one time. I'm inking up pens way faster than I'm cleaning them at any given time. So that is a thing. What else did I have? Did I have anything else in my notes? I don't know what it means to have too many. I think it's subjective. You know, I definitely have moments where I'm looking at my collection. I'm like, yeah, this is kind of a lot. But then when I actually start going through the drawers and looking at them all, there's some that I'm like, I could easily cut out like 10% of the collection.
Yeah.
Pretty easily if I had to. But there's other ones that I'm like, yeah, a lot of these are like historical reference exclusives and, you know, various versions of things that are like super rare. They're prototypes. They're, you know, whatever things that I'm like, ah, these are kind of irreplaceable. So I am definitely like a, by default, keep it. But if I like really, really had to, I could let a bunch go. I would say there's no right or wrong answer for anybody for this. It's a very personal question as to how many pens is too many. I would say, kind of like you alluded to, Drew, if you feel like burdened by them, or if it's like, you know, causing you financial problems because you're spending too much on pens, which hopefully no one's in that situation, but like any hobby, you can definitely spend more money than you intend or that you really should. So things like that, that are like, those are not particularly great. And I would say a somewhat more objective thing is like, if you have to keep a spreadsheet of them because you can't remember what you have, maybe that's a sign. But I don't know. I like to keep track of all that. So I definitely have a spreadsheet and I've had one for a while.
I have a spreadsheet mainly to, keep track of value.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, if there's like data about it, like when you acquired it and how much you paid for it and all that kind of stuff, that makes sense to keep in a spreadsheet.
But. And if you ever need to worry about like insuring them at some point, you want to know how much they're worth.
That's true. That's not a bad way to go too. So yeah, anyway, appreciate the question. It was a fun little prompt.
Yeah. All right, question three comes to us from Vanessa, and Vanessa asks, I have a question regarding what criteria has to be met to become a Goulet exclusive pen. Mm-hmm. I love Banu, and I know this is one company that does a lot of exclusives only to yourselves, which is great when I'm in the US, but not when I'm in the UK. I just have to hope that they do not sell out before my next trip back to the US. So I was wondering, for exclusivity, is this based on predicted sales of their products that get you exclusivity? Thanks for being a great company and helping me grow my collection. Thank you, Vanessa.
You're very welcome. Thanks for supporting us. Okay, so in terms of what defines an exclusive, you know, it pretty much is what you would think. It's basically something that you can only get through one retailer. Sometimes there's like a particular regional exclusive, like maybe a North American exclusive or something like that. But we do a lot of Goulet exclusives. And you know, there's various levels of what that looks like, and the process for doing that can range a little bit. So I'll explain kind of what these are. So there are products that we develop ourselves, like ink samples, pen flush, the ink vial holders, you know, stuff that we are like designing or maybe manufacturing that is not something that would exist out in the world unless we did it. Not that other people can't do their own samples and stuff like that, but basically like we're making it like truly happen. That's what we can call like an evergreen exclusive. It's something that we just want to make. We want to sell it all the time. We restock it. We just keep it because it should exist. And so that we're always sourcing it ourselves. We'll buy whatever quantity is needed. It's going to vary a lot depending on whatever the product is and where we get it and all that kind of stuff. But it's really just kind of up to us. So, you know, and it's also up to us to like promote it and let you know that they exist and pricing and all that kind of stuff. So that's the most autonomous type of products that we carry. Other ones, you know, you mentioned Banu, you know, basically other brands. We're not like white labeling anything from any pen brands. We don't have like a Goulet branded pen. This is a much more common thing in other industries, you know, like a lot of the products. So you think about like
Kirkland.
Basically Kirkland, Equate, Up and Up, like any generic brand of anything, like Target or Walmart, like they're not manufacturing this stuff. There's like somebody that's making this for them and they're putting their name on it. So we don't do any of that necessarily. All the exclusives that we have pretty much are, you know, like Banu. It's a Banu thing and it's just an exclusive. So, you know, whatever. So there are a couple different ones we have. We might have a timed or a launch exclusive. So that would be a product that would be available at other retailers eventually. Excuse me, but we might be the first ones to get it. Maybe for the first 30 or 90 days, you know, we might be the only ones that have it, and then it can open up to others. We've done that before. This is really good for products where we think there will be some demand for it, but not enough for us to meet what's called the MOQ. This is the minimum order quantity. So basically, for any manufacturer to make anything, there's time in R&D, developing, you know, coming up with the SKUs and pictures, all that stuff. You know, there's like a certain, you know, they have to place minimum quantities for whatever material they're doing. So there's, you know, going to be a certain number. It's going to depend on the price point and the manufacturer. It's different. It's kind of all over the place. But that's always where the conversation starts is, you know, how many would we need to buy in order to do an exclusive? So brands that are smaller are more nimble and they have more flexibility maybe. Brands that are larger, you know, you have to commit to a higher quantity, and it all depends. So that's always like the most important part of the conversation when kicking that off is, can we even afford to buy as many? Do we think we have the demand for that exclusive? Because it's like, basically it has to be enough demand just purely through us. And it doesn't always make sense. So, you know, the thing that works really well for a timed or a launch exclusive, you know, the manufacturer will get basically like a guaranteed sale from us because we're committing to a certain number of them. And then by the time it opens up to other retailers, that's fewer pens overall that they're going to have to commit to selling. So it's relatively low risk for them. Sometimes it's, you know, it's more risk probably on us as the retailer. The manufacturer is fine. They're probably going to sell them no matter what, because it's usually somewhat smaller batches of pens. You know, it's usually like if there's a U.S. distributor, they're usually committing to the full allotment. And then, you know, if they're not sure if there's going to be enough demand from other retailers, but we can say, you know, just as an example, say the minimum order is 300 pens or something. And if we say, well, we can get a timed exclusive, we'll commit to 100 pens. And then the other 200, you can sell through other retailers. That might be worth it for them. We might say like, yeah, we think there's demand for 100 pens. We can maybe sell most of them within that time frame. And then kind of everybody wins. Whereas they may be on the fence about doing it if, you know, they've got to speculate and, you know, try to sell all 300 to different retailers. So sometimes that can work. But a true exclusive is the one that like we'll work with a pen brand and we'll be like, we're going to get the entire run. So, you know, whatever it is.
If like Banu.
Yeah, like Banu. So they'll say, usually the manufacturer will say, this is the minimum that you need to order for us to, for it to, you know, kind of be worth our time of making this exclusive thing. A lot of times we can order more than that if we think there's really hot demand. Sometimes it depends on like the material. You know, if it's like a single batch of material or something like that, and it's kind of hard to coordinate ordering that, you know, that's sometimes where we've had, you know, something where we come out with something and then, you know, we might sell out initially and it takes like 4 to 6 months to restock. That's usually because it takes that long to get materials and make another batch of it. So we usually try to kind of get it right from the very beginning so that it doesn't like have these huge delays in between. We can't always get it right, but that's what we'll try to do. So oftentimes we will try to, you know, there's no magic formula for any of this. We have to do a lot of number crunching and look at previous sales and stuff like that. But
especially the first one.
Yeah, exactly. If it's something like a Banu and we've done like several Euphorias or something like that, we're like, okay, we have a little more data to go off of maybe, but even still, it's like, what time of year is it? What else is coming out at that time? How saturated? Like, are people sick of Euphorias? Like, I mean, who knows?
We've got a lot of data on exclusive Retro 51s, and those are still a big old mystery.
Yeah, those always kind of keep us guessing. They can be a little hit or miss for us, but yeah. So it's like it's part art and it's part science, right? Which is, you know, part of what keeps it so fun and interesting. But it's a huge investment for us as the retailer because, you know, basically when we're buying, you know, a large lot of pens, you know, that's typically the size of you know, an order that a distributor would be placing who might sell to hundreds of retailers in a region. You know, just in the U.S., like there might be, I don't know, couple hundred, maybe a couple thousand retailers. So if a distributor picks up a pen and it's 500 pens, they will probably not have a problem selling 500 pens to their various retailers. Whereas we, as one retailer, 500 pens, that can be a lot. So it really depends. We got to really kind of be excited about it, feel like it's going to do something, you know, exciting for the community. And like the colors on trend and stuff like that. So there is a lot of kind of you know, faith and guesswork that we have to put into these things. And then also, we're probably not going to sell out of them super quickly. So, you know, typically part of, you know, anybody who's worked in the retail environment, you know, you live and die by how you manage your inventory. So it's like, if every product we ordered took us like a year or two to sell, that would be a lot of money just tied up sitting there forever. And it would really kind of put a chokehold on running our business. So we have to try to refresh things. And, you know, we average on hand keeping, you know, between like 45 and 60 days, you know, worth of stuff on hand. You know, if we can get restocked fairly quickly, you know, that can be, you know, shorter if it needs to be. But, you know, we're not just, we don't have an endless, you know, bank account. So we can't just buy and hold as much of all the inventory that we ever want. So we do have to weigh that out pretty heavily when we're doing exclusives. Like, is it going to take, you know, 45 days or 2.5 years to sell this number of pens, and how much money is that time?
We've seen both.
We definitely have. So, you know, just for an example, a pen like the Lamy Vista Black that we launched, it'll be 2 years ago here this summer. We knew that we were going to have that for a while because we had to place a very, very high minimum quantity order. And that was okay. We did that knowing that we were going to have it for a while because the opportunity to get that exclusive was that it, worth it to us. Whereas something like a Benu would be, you know, far shorter than that. So it really depends. And it's like, because the prices on pens can range so much too, that really comes into play as well. So it's really different for every brand. And I'll say, like, there's some brands that we have that we haven't ever done an exclusive on because it just doesn't make sense and, or whatever. And there's others where it makes a lot more sense and we do them all the time. You know, I would say Benu in particular, they're so responsive and they're so creative. I think they just like really enjoy getting to come up with these different ideas and stuff. And we feed off of that with them. Everybody's having a good time. Y'all are enjoying them. They're selling. So that's one that makes sense. We give them a lot of ideas. Not everything works out. You know, we give them, you know, probably out of every pen that we're able to make happen, it's probably at least two or three other designs that we've asked them about that doesn't make sense in a pen.
But they will always try. They are not afraid of anything.
Yeah, they've done some samples of some things and we're like, yeah, that just doesn't look as good as what we were hoping.
But they will always try.
They will try.
And then some companies just don't do exclusives. It's, you know, and that's just the way it is.
That's true. Yeah, but I would say like in general, like, I always think about this because like if I was a manufacturer, you know, they're making things, they've got this production schedule, they're doing all this stuff. Like there's not as much benefit, I would have to believe, like financially for a manufacturer to do a single retailer exclusive as there is for us as the retailer, right?
Right.
So like we, I think, benefit more. So I think a lot of the manufacturers, the reason they do it is because honestly, it's like it just keeps things, I don't know, fresh and interesting for them.
Think that they know that if a retailer gets an exclusive, that will be promoted heavily. And
yeah.
Therefore,
yeah,
their brand
gets
promoted.
It's probably more of like an overall branding kind of a thing. Yeah, I guess it's kind of like not necessarily free marketing, but it is kind of like additional marketing.
Yeah. For them. I will say that to speak to your point, the only point I was going to add to this was that in general, you might be wondering like why are exclusives beneficial? Mm. And I think that exclusive pens or an exclusive product for any retailer in any industry these days, with the presence of large companies like Amazon, who, you know, smaller retailers like ourselves, like any other fountain pen retailers on the planet, really, we're all more competing against Amazon than we are with each other in a lot of ways. And any retailer exclusive fountain pen is something that that retailer can have that a company like Amazon cannot have. Mm-hmm. And it allows smaller companies to compete against much larger companies via unique value proposition.
Yeah. And it keeps things more exciting for you all. Honestly, and it's kind of rewarding too, I think, for you as the end user, because we're engaging with you all directly. You know, you're not, I mean, you might be able to engage sort of directly with a brand, you know, a manufacturer, but it's not the same as engaging directly with a retailer like us. So we are going to be probably more responsive to some of the designs and colors and things like that that are more special and unique and, you know, more specific that wouldn't have as broad of appeal, but we can go super, super narrow, very specific and develop things. And by having that exclusivity for us, it allows us to, you know, maybe kind of weigh out the risk with the potential benefit of having that exclusive lock on a design. And then we can go a little crazier, like an arcade carpet rickshaw case, for example, or other various, you know, kind of out there things that we've done.
Fountain, rollerball with a pirate on it.
There you go. So it's fun. It also keeps things fun and interesting for us as it does for you. So it's definitely beneficial, but, you know, that's sort of a little bit of behind the scenes of how it works. So
yeah.
Thanks for asking the question. All right. Drew, you got some good stuff to talk about this one. I'm excited for this. All right. Doug Spooky says, what would you recommend for Disney-inspired pens? Now, you just went to Disney, so are you?
I did, but sure, I've always got Disney on my mind. So that's not, I forgot about this question when I wore my shirt.
I was going to say, is that planned? Because you're definitely wearing a Disney shirt.
No, it just did. I actually brought this to Disney, didn't end up wearing it. So it was one of my like already ironed shirts.
Oh, nice.
It was just happened to work. I will say that that's a very broad concept. I didn't know if Doug here is talking about, you know, specific characters or just kind of like Disney theme overall. Mm. Like, how many Disney characters are there? Are you including Marvel and Star Wars? I don't know. So I just went with kind of like the classic characters, you know, got some princesses, got some villains. So Benu's coming out with a pen called the Steamboat Master, which has Steamboat Willie on it. So you can't really get much more Disney than that. Mm-hmm. Even though Disney is not going to be mentioned in the product description in any way.
Nope. That is still trademarked.
It is, but Steamboat Willie is not. So if you wanted Steamboat Willie, not Mickey, Steamboat Willie, on your fountain pen, the Benu Steamboat Master is the way to go. So apart from that, though, I did pick a few that I think match up well. And really, one of the best matches you can find is just to go through and look at the currently available Sailor Pro Gear Slims and past available Pro Gear Slims. Because if you wanted princess pens, these are the pens that you should be going to. Because the color combinations, you usually get a cap that's different than the barrel. Depending on what version of what princess you want, you've got a lot of options there. The most obvious one is Sailor Follow the Mermaid. Because not only is it a mermaid-themed pen, but it really does have Ariel's kind of purple and green vibe going on already. So that one's kind of a no-brainer. And also, I'd like to mention that Ariel is the only Disney princess that has proven to have excellent cursive handwriting. Mm. Because even underwater, she like just kind of leaned off and scribbled her name with one hand, and it looked marvelous.
It looked pretty
good, had a nice little flourish, you know. So respect to Ariel for that.
Ursula, too, had respectable handwriting, I will say.
Did she sign her name?
Well, I assume she wrote the contract.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, of course. So, you know. Yeah, excellent. So those mermaids and whatever Ursula is. And then if
she's
you wanted...
a sea witch.
Yeah.
She's an octopus, right?
Yeah. Half octopus, but what do you call
What is a mermaid equivalent of a half octopus?
Right. And then I noticed that the Sailor Pro Gear Slim Nadeshiko is a pretty good pink and white match for Princess Aurora or Sleeping Beauty. And if you wanted to keep on going with the Pro Gear Slims, Fuki is a pretty dead ringer for Tiana's kind of green look. However, if you didn't want to go with Tiana's more formal attire, you can rock the Benu Luminous Neon, which has some crazy glow-in-the-dark ness, and then you've got green and purple, which definitely has more of a Mardi Gras vibe if you wanted to go the Tiana New Orleans route. It's not exactly Tiana centric, but it's New Orleans centric, which obviously and the glowingness we can say has a little bit of Ray the Firefly kind of nodding a little bit if we wanted to go deep, you know. Don't make me light up my butt. Mulan.
Real quick. There is a word for a half human, half octopus. It's a Cecalia, C-E-C-A-E-L-I-A.
Okay.
Cecalia, Cecalia, I don't know. And also, according to Wikipedia, Ursula's occupation is Sorceress Faustian Bargainer.
Wait, Faustian. Oh,
Faustian,
gotcha, yes.
Faustian, yes.
Yeah, the whole Sorceress deal with the devil thing.
Faustian Bargainer.
All right.
Sounds very fancy. Yeah, anyway, there you go. Legit. Learn something new. Half human, half octopus.
I thought about Mulan because obviously the Year of the Dragon pen by Visconti is pretty accurate there. I'm not trying to just phone it in because like, oh, she's Chinese, this Chinese. Literally, the dragon clip looks like Mushu, though. Like, that's
true.
It looks just like him.
It's kind of a fancy pen, though.
It is a fancy pen.
Mulan's not very fancy.
No, she's not. But I will say that she has a lot of different attire throughout that show. She's got her casual stuff. She's got her armor. She's got, you know, out without the armor, she got this final formal wear at the end. So she doesn't really have a trademark set of colors. Mm. And what colors she does have like more than three. So I'm sure there's a Pro Gear Slim that more accurately captured Mulan's colors in the past. I looked through ours, couldn't find a dead ringer, but I'm sure that there's some that could work depending on which version of Mulan you're going with. A Pelican M200 in pastel blue is what I'm choosing for Belle because it's blue and white, which is kind of her, you know, normal, you know, casual attire.
That's a pretty good choice.
But here's the thing about Belle. Any fountain pen is a Belle fountain pen because it got me thinking she would totally be a fountain pen nerd.
Of course.
And then I started thinking, well, hold on. A lot of these princesses.
Ariel would definitely be a fountain pen nerd.
So that got me thinking. You've got Ariel, you've got Belle, absolutely Rapunzel. Like,
oh, yeah.
There are a lot of princesses that would definitely like planner girls.
Princesses, like, there are a lot of hoarders in the Disney princess world.
And collectors and artists. Like, yeah. Rapunzel is a super accomplished artist.
For sure, yeah.
So I'm thinking, oh my gosh, these girls would love fountain pens. Mm-hmm. Like, I got super excited about that. Also, I think that Elsa, you know, not Anna, but Elsa, I could see her being a fountain pen person.
You don't think Anna would be a fountain pen person?
No, she'd drop them all the time. She could have a traveler's pen.
She's not responsible enough.
No, she's not. I wouldn't trust Anna with a fountain pen. So if we want to move away from the princesses and check out some villains here, if you want a general Disney vibes, like you're talking to like just the castle, I thought about my childhood and putting in a VHS and seeing that and then the little star going across the castle. I thought about the Sailor Pro Gear in blue Quasar. Mm-hmm. You've got two shades of blue, some sparkles. To me, that just feels like Disney. Mm. So that was my pick for general Disney vibes. And if you wanted to go villain specific, both Maleficent and Ursula have the black and purple vibe thing happening. And the Diplomat Elox with purple rings, I think, is a pretty sharp ringer for either of those two horrible ladies. I think it has the right tones. I think Maleficent a little bit more because the lines on the pen kind of remind me of like kind of the chest neck area of the dragon that she turns into with lines across there. Those are black lines and the purple lines, but they're all in purple. So anyway, it works. And then moving on to Hades, this one's easy because we have a gray pen with a blue cap. That is a Pilot Kakuno, and he is literally a giant gray thing with a blue head. So, hair, fire, anyway. So that's a pretty good one for there. The Banu Talisman in Dream Bean is a brown and black pen, and Scar from Lion King is brown and black. So I thought that was a good match for him. We're just going visually, by the way, not really personality driven for this list. I know I've done some before that like were a little bit deeper, not going deep on this one. And then finally, I picked a black and red pen, which is the Tachiya Miyabi Earth Bokashi Lava, because we've got two pretty notable villains in the Queen of Hearts and Jafar that rock the whole black and red motif. So we've got a twofer for Jafar and Queen of Hearts, and we've got a twofer for Maleficent and Ursula there. So that was what I came up with. Nothing super deep there, but the biggest revelation was just the princesses and how I totally could see them vibing with the fountain pen community.
Definitely.
So yeah, I'm gonna claim them as one of us.
I think that's fair.
One of us.
That's awesome.
There we go.
I have nothing to contribute or add to that. I thought you did a great job covering that.
I could go further because there's just so many characters, but for the sake of time, we'll hold back.
All right, good stuff. All right, got one more question.
Yeah, we do, from Jennifer. Mm-hmm. Jennifer's going to close us out today with a unique question that I've been sitting on for a while because you mentioned something that prompted her.
I did.
Jennifer says, can we hear about the story of Brian and Apple Cinnamon Cheerios?
Yes.
And I did ask you, I'm like, would you feel comfortable sharing this?
Sure.
And you said, yeah. So
why not?
We went ahead and added this on there because we've alluded a few times about how Brian doesn't really ever back down from a challenge. And he also likes to challenge himself.
Yes.
And this is one of my favorite examples of that happening.
Yes. So a little bit of a disclaimer here. If you don't like hearing about various bodily functions, maybe skip out on this one. Not to spoiler alert the whole thing, but I'll try not to make it too graphic, but you can see where this is heading. So I don't remember exactly how old I was. I want to say I was like in
middle school, right?
No, I was younger than that. I think it was like late elementary school. So probably like eight or nine.
Oh.
Relatively young. You're thinking of the other good story. I got a few stories about.
I forgot there was two of them.
Eating. Yeah. Yeah. We'll stick to this one today.
Okay.
So I was at home and as a kid, I loved cereal. I would eat cereal every single day, not just for breakfast, but as like my afternoon snack as well. So this was my, came home from school, was going to have my afternoon snack of a couple of bowls of cereal, because I would do that.
A couple of bowls?
A couple of bowls of cereal, yeah. Sometimes I would have like three bowls of cereal as a snack.
As a snack?
Yeah. And shockingly, I was overweight in middle school, but I had no idea why. So anyway, I just really love cereal. I had a good appetite for it. So, you know, I was never like destitute, but, you know, my parents, we had to, you know, not flush with all kinds of things.
You've mentioned that you had the bag cereal, right?
Oh, yeah. It was much more common for me to get like the bag kind of generic version of cereal. It was like a special treat to get the name brand stuff. So, you know, was kind of used to that. You know, I had just opened up a fresh bag of the apple cinnamon Cheerio Toastios or whatever the heck they're called. You know, which honestly, they're fine. Like, I'm not super picky about cereal, only certain ones. So, you know, I got this big, I forget how big the bag was. I don't know, like 40 ounces or whatever the heck those huge bags are.
I've heard the story before and I've always pictured a box of cereal.
No, it was a big bag. Yeah.
This changes things.
It was a very sizable amount of cereal. Anyway, so I go and I just pour my regular bowl of cereal and I just cut the bag open, all that kind of stuff. And the thing is, like, I mean, even now to this day, I don't even like to just have one type of cereal. I will mix like two or three different cereals together in a bowl and that will be my cereal. I like a bunch of things happening. Same thing with ice cream. I like different ice creams. I love junk in my ice cream.
Also like your random food bowls too.
Food bowls.
Like you've put
like a diversity of foods.
I've seen you put like a rolled up piece of lunch meat on top of a deconstructed, you know, stuffed pepper casserole.
Yeah.
100%. And then like some sort of random carb on top of that.
I like randomness and randomness of textures, flavors, all kinds of stuff.
Wow.
This is how I roll. So so I've always liked cereals that have lots of different textures and things going on. Anyway, so I guess doing that as a kid, I would often like open up every type of cereal, which, you know, as a parent now, you're like, this drives you insane.
Yeah, don't you dare.
Because it's like like the freshness starts going down immediately as soon as you open that thing up. Not that it hung around that long anyway, because I obviously ate a ton of cereal. But it would definitely happen. So my mom was much more of like the, let's finish up, you know, the ones that are left and then move
standard
on to the next
parent
one.
Philosophy.
Sure. So I cracked open this fresh new bag of apple cinnamon Cheerio equivalent. And my mom mentions to me, she says, hey, I bought a box of Honey Nut Cheerios. And I was like, oh, that was like a special
name brand
in the box. And like the Honey Nut Cheerios, I was like, ooh, that's even better. So she says to me, when you're done with the apple cinnamon Cheerios, then you can open up the Honey Nut Cheerios. You see where this is going.
I do.
And now having my own kids and knowing like with Joseph how literal he is, I'm like, oh my gosh, I was the same way as a kid. So what my little 9-year-old or whatever brain heard was, well, I want to eat these Honey Nut Cheerios. So I have to eat all of the apple cinnamon Cheerios now. Then I'll have a bowl of Honey Nut Cheerios, what I really want. So I went and got one of those like giant like silver mixing bowls like my mom would use for like baking. And this thing was at least 12 inches in diameter, probably 8 inches deep. I poured the entire bag into this thing, proceeded to pour in probably a half gallon of milk into this thing. And
were your parents there watching you do this?
My mom was around, yeah, because she told me about the cereal thing. But
she didn't try to stop you?
Well, my parents worked from home and they worked like crazy, crazy hours. So my mom had kind of mentioned it to me. And then, you know, I'm just whatever, doing afternoon kid, making noises, pouring cereal, you know. She didn't really have any clue of exactly what I was doing. Okay. I don't remember her like being in the room with me. I remember her like mentioning it to me at some point, and then I remember being there in the kitchen.
Oh man.
So that my little nine-year-old brain was like, I need to eat all of these apple cinnamon Cheerios right now. And then eat another bowl of Honey Nut Cheerios. So I did. I ate the entire bag of apple cinnamon Cheerios.
God.
Fully with the intention of then eating a bowl of Honey
Nut
Cheerios.
Just that much, just a half gallon of milk alone is enough to...
It was too much.
Yes.
Which is exactly where this story is going. So I eat the entire thing. At no point during this process was I thinking, this is too much cereal. I was thinking, I can't wait to have my Honey Nut Cheerios. So I proceeded to eat the entire bowl of the apple cinnamon Cheerios. And then once I finish it,
So you can have more cereal.
So I can have more cereal. And at that point, I'm like, I don't feel so great. So I was maybe like 20 feet away from the bathroom. And I could see where things were headed. I knew that cereal was not long for my digestive system. So I started making my way towards the bathroom. And I didn't make it.
Were you?
I made it.
Were you moving quickly or slowly?
I don't remember how fast I was moving. I think I was trying to move pretty quickly because I didn't have that far to go. And it was one of those, you know, when you're a kid and it's like you have to go to the bathroom and it's like all of a sudden you're like, I have to go to the bathroom
now.
Yeah. It was kind of like that. Like at no point while I was.
I still have my moments like that.
Yeah. It happens. But, you know, usually as an adult, when you start to feel kind of nauseous, you're like, oh, I can see this coming. Let me stop doing the thing I'm doing right now that's causing me to feel nauseous, and then I maybe won't get sick. At no point was that occurring to my little brain, and I then proceeded to get sick in all of the
not
Cheerios.
In the bathroom.
I don't remember. I don't think I made it. I don't remember making it to the. I think I might have made it to the bathroom, but I don't think I made it to the toilet. I don't recall.
Did you? How close did you get to finishing?
I ate all the apple cinnamon Cheerios.
Really?
I remember eating it all.
Oh my
and
God!
Then, yeah, that's when I was like, "This is
so."
This
was,
is a terrible
so when
decision.
You were actually saying, "Okay, now time to move on to my more cereal," that's when you decided, "Hang on."
I think there was at some point there where my physiology took over, and despite my mental fortitude, the body just had hit its limit.
Wow!
And I proceeded to expel said apple cinnamon Cheerios. And to this day, I still have kind of a taste aversion to apple cinnamon Cheerios. Yeah. It's been so long, I haven't even tried them.
Yeah, I wouldn't even.
In a while, but I definitely like for the rest of my childhood, I wanted nothing to do with apple cinnamon Cheerios.
No.
But I mean, love Cheerios and still love Honey Nut Cheerios. I was very happy once I, you know, recovered and was then able to have my Honey Nut Cheerios. But my mom was beside herself. I'm sure she was not overjoyed with having to clean up my consequences, but I think it was just one of those amusing things that I did as a kid where they're just like, it was like just the family story for a while of like, yep, this is what Brian does. So wasn't my only story like that.
No.
That's why I'll save others for another time.
I've heard this story many times and it's still just I love it. And
but I keep that firmly in mind because I have my own kids now. So we are always disclaiming, you know, whenever we say something like.
And like this is just, it's so familiar because, you know, while you are much more intelligent and you can understand consequences as a result now, you still do have that, like, that determination and that drive.
Yeah.
Like you have always had that, like, I'm going to achieve my goal.
The mind is powerful. Like usually you can do more than you think you can.
Yeah.
Though at some point you will hit a limit.
So,
and I have found that limit many times in my life.
It's interesting that like you didn't develop that drive. You developed the ability to restrain your own drive.
Yeah.
And that's usually interesting. Like, I mean, I feel like with me, I've worked hard my whole life to develop drive, to like cultivate, you know, ambition and determination and follow through. And that's just been innate for you. Like you have just had to learn how to temper that and aim it in the right direction.
Yeah. Learn how to turn that into something productive.
And that's
not
just,
destructive.
That's fascinating to me.
Yeah. Just different wiring, I guess. I don't know. But yeah. Yep. I have a number of stories like that from my childhood, but that was one for the ages here. So there you go. If you're ever wondering why you will never see me eating apple cinnamon Cheerios, that's why. But I've definitely told
what was
my
the most
kids
what was the story. Most recent cereal mixture you've had?
Yesterday I had some fresh blueberries, which is always a treat.
Okay.
I had grape nuts. I had this other what is the name of the cereal called? It's like one of those like granola, you know.
Honey Bunches of Oats? Or?
No, it like comes in a bag. It's like a bougie granola. You buy it in like the granola
section. Oh, it's not cereal?
It's cereal, but it's like granola.
Oh, okay.
Like earthy, you know, healthy granola type stuff. It was like a cashew and peanut butter with like chocolate chip kind of thing.
Okay.
So that was in there. And then I also had Cheerios on top of that. So I mixed three different cereals.
And blueberries.
Yeah. I just like a cacophony
of
textures and flavors happening in my cereal.
Fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. This is how I roll. So, yeah. Anyway, that's all the questions that we had this week. That wasn't even the what's happening. That was...
No. Well, thank you, Jennifer, for allowing me the opportunity to relive that memory. I always find Brian's storytelling to be hilarious.
Yes. If you have any other questions, especially if you're an audio listener, you can email us at pencast@gouletpens.com. Otherwise, you can just leave a comment on YouTube and we will check it out. All right, now it's time for a pen spotlight. And we're going to spotlight the Lamy Lux. Okay.
What do we have here, Brian?
We have a bunch of different pens here, clearly. We got some... This is an All-Star, right? So we're all pretty familiar with the Lamy All-Star,
I would assume. But now I want a blue LX just because I'm seeing it.
I mean, so the whole thing with the LX, right? It's basically a jazzed up All-Star, right? Like, they're not really trying to hide that. You know what? I forgot the tube that it comes in. That's part of the experience, but we'll have to just show a picture of that or something. So All-Star, you know, aluminum pen. It's got the clear grip, steel nib. You know, you kind of get it, right?
Standard silver steel nib.
Steel nib, yep, silver steel. I mean, it could be black, depending on which pen that you're looking at. So the whole thing with the Lux, it's a little bit more expensive. It's going to have nicer trim to it. So, you know, some kind of finish, trim that will more match the pen. So this is the, what's it called? Marron.
Yeah.
So it's like a, you know, kind of a toffee brown kind of a color.
The best one.
It has this nice, like, shiny brown clip and finial. You know, all of the finials on the regular All-Stars are just that black kind of matte plastic. So these are little upgraded finials, upgraded clips, and then, you know, the same smoky grip section. But the nib itself is going to be, it's still a steel nib, essentially similar, but aesthetically, it just looks a little snazzier.
Very.
You know,
they're, so all, they're all this black nib with the gold trim around the slit.
Yeah. Looks really nice. Writes well. And then on the back end too, it's got the different color to match there. Whereas on the regular version, it's just black plastic, right? So a little nicer hardware. It just looks a little classier.
Definitely.
And they're all sort of like precious metal themed. So that's why I don't know if we'll see a blue one because.
Yeah, they're keeping them all in that family.
So we actually have four available now. The gold one here came out originally, but it is no longer available.
I don't even remember that one.
Yeah, this is why I keep everything, so I can pull it back out. So gold one, you know, it's like a matte gold, still same black, you know, nib and everything. Gold on the finial. Ooh. Looks nice and snazzy, right?
Yeah.
But don't want that because you can't get it.
Get out of here.
So the ones that we do still have that they're still making, the Marron, the rose gold, which looks really nice, actually. Again, same nib. And all that, nice rose gold accents there. So that looks pretty classy.
It does.
And then we have Palladium, which is like a silvery white kind of a color. And this looks almost like the regular color, but I do believe it's actually plated in Palladium.
Oh, interesting.
So it looks kind of a silvery color, but then obviously on the top, you can see it looks way different. And it's just a lot shinier, too.
Yeah.
So that is a little bit different. And then last but not least, we have Ruthenium, which is like a gunmetal type of a color, which also looks really nice on the top there.
Is that one your favorite?
Oh, it's hard to say which one's my favorite, honestly. I really like the combination of rose gold and black. So I like this one a lot. The Marron is actually really nice.
Yeah, that one's definitely my favorite.
I like that one a lot too. So I don't know. I kind of dig them all, honestly. I wasn't as crazy about the gold, but now that it's like not around anymore, I kind of like that one.
Yeah.
And now it's like a little more special. But, you know, there you go. So these ones, oh, I should have looked up the price. They are a little more than an All-Star. The regular All-Star is what, like just under $40? And the Lux, it comes in a little more elaborate packaging. It's got like this aluminum tube packaging, which is part of the experience. I probably should have grabbed it. We'll throw a picture up here. You know, for most people, the tube probably doesn't matter because you won't really use it. But that is an important part of their like packaging. And I think that's also part of the increased cost. I want to say this is pushing more like $60, $70. Let me see if I can get the price real quick. But you get the idea. Yeah, so that's it. So there's four colors. You can get the same nib offerings. Oh, $56. Okay, so it's really not that bad. It's like 15 bucks more. So it is a little more than an All-Star, but I don't know. If you like the color selection, they're different. They look a little classier. So I think they're worth a look if you're into the Lamy stuff. You know, you can get nib offerings on most of these, extra fine, fine, and medium. So kind of the same offering as the standard ones. The only thing is the spare nibs that you get for these are not going to be this exact design. It's not going to be, you know, you can get a black nib, but it's the plain black nib. So it's really just extra fine, fine and medium that are going to have that like black with a little bit of fanciness on the trim. That's about,
well, there you go.
That's about all I have to say about the Lux.
All right. Do we want to talk about what's happening?
Yeah.
Or what has happened?
What has been happening? Let's do it.
All right. In my life, Brian, I've made some big life changes.
Oh.
Yeah, some big life changes.
Really?
Yes. Wow. I've talked to you about this before.
Mm.
My wife and I have had some marital difficulties in arguing, or let's say discussing,
mm-hmm.
how much a stained glass Pizza Hut lamp would be beneficial in our home.
I think this is common at a certain point in your marriage. This is going to come to a head.
Yeah, we're coming up on 16 years here, and you know, it's just we knew we were going to hit a rough patch, so mm-hmm. we're just going to try to weather it. So I feel that the Pizza Hut stained glass lamp is iconic of a bygone era, full of joy and happiness.
Yeah.
And pizza, and red plastic cups, and
book it programs.
I would love to have a large stained glass Pizza Hut lamp hanging above our dining room table. However,
I couldn't see why she would possibly be opposed to that.
Neither can I.
Every wife wants a centerpiece of a
most every wife
pizza franchise
except for Shannon. Yeah,
wow, so weird.
So you know, it's been a struggle, frankly. So, recently I discovered a smaller version of that in the form of a desk lamp, a smaller lamp, a Tiffany style, you know, clicky knob desk lamp.
Oh, wow.
I found one on eBay. I said, honey, it's slightly more affordable, which isn't much at all. I can have it in my den where my decor happens, not in the public area.
Okay. So out of sight, out of
mind
for her.
And it was the one time she chose not to channel the mom from A Christmas Story and said...
It does very, very much parallel that dynamic, doesn't it?
It's a major award.
Yeah.
That's right. And she acquiesced, and it is now currently in my possession.
Wow.
And my life is...
Oh, my gosh.
So much better than
it like
it
this?
Once
like
was.
This round one?
Yeah, but smaller. But yeah.
Smaller? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, like
so,
that.
That is... probably the one I bought. Yeah.
Okay.
Don't look at the price.
It's on eBay.
It's gone.
Oh, it's not there.
No.
It came up in the Google listing, but then...
Because it's mine now.
Oh, my gosh.
That's it.
Wow.
There's only one. I'm sure they made more. I'm sure there's more, but that particular one now resides in my... I don't have a table for it, so I need to actually get a little side table to put it on.
Okay.
But
okay.
It's happening. It's... glorious and amazing and wonderful and perfect, and it has made my life complete. So,
it's like real stained glass.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, that's the cool thing about stained glass. Like, it's not cheap, but it can't really be mass produced.
Right.
You know, it has to be hand done. So, it's a reproduction. It's not one they had in the restaurant because those were the larger ones on the pendant. But it looks identical. So,
that's awesome.
Yes.
Oh, there's like a whole Reddit thing going on here.
They're beautiful.
Our nostalgia.
God, they're so beautiful. So that happened. My life is complete and wonderful now. And it's never been better. on the flip side of things, we took the dogs to the groomer, which we normally never do all three dogs at the same time.
Okay.
And we reminded ourselves why. It was rainy on Saturday.
Oh, that's fun.
So great. Yes. Took the dogs out in the rain, lifted them up into the back seat, made sure none of them jumped out, you know, drove them over again out of the back seat, rain, wrangling all three of them. They're just all so excited, just jumping everywhere. And Archer gets so panicked. He thinks that one of them's going to just jump out of the car and just run off. And it's happened before. Like when we went to dog park one time, Hank jumped right out and started running to the dog park, scared us to death. I leaped at him, tore up my knees to like tackle him. So now, of course, Archer's just petrified that this is going to be an inevitability every time. So it's all a whole panicky thing. Anyway, we dropped the three of them off. later, we were reminded again why we don't do all three of them at the same time, because the cost was just painful.
Mm.
But to be fair, they haven't had to go to the vet recently, so that's fine. Mm. So that was okay. And then that night, I went over to my brother's house and we watched UFC 299. And
whoa,
that was a very good event. A lot, you know, solid event. You know, the guy I wanted to win the most won. He was 35, a gentleman by the name of Dustin Poirier, who was 35 is pretty old for a, you know, MMA fighter.
Yeah.
He snuck one out, and that delights me. He's a good dude. He's got like his own charity and stuff like that.
That's cool.
It's I can count on like one hand how many MMA fighters I like actually like as human beings.
Yeah.
So they're like just they kind of de facto become my favorite fighters because I don't think they're horrible people.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's few and far between, but whatever. I brought Chad a new vinyl album because he collects, you know, vinyl records.
Okay.
And he loves the movie That Thing You Do with Tom Hanks. Oh, loves it. And so
it's pretty solid.
Oh, it's great. And it's got a great soundtrack too.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Amazing soundtrack. So he was just thrilled when I delivered that to him.
Wow.
So he put it on immediately, put it on, started playing That Thing You Do, which is an amazing song, by the way.
Oh yeah.
Solid, solid movie. So that was delightful. It was nice seeing a solid reaction.
You don't have any vinyl records, do you? Seems like the kind of thing you could get into.
I'm not a big music guy.
That's true.
Just in general.
Yeah, like, you're really weird about music.
Just doesn't really occupy an important place in my life.
That's interesting.
I love certain bands.
You love the bands you love.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
But, like, I don't, like, say, oh, you know what I should do? Put on some music.
Mm.
I just don't do that.
Interesting.
Okay. Yeah. It's always just kind of noise for me. And it makes me hard. It's, like, it just makes it difficult to concentrate.
Mm. Maybe that's because of the type of music you listen to.
And, no, any music. Like, I can really? The only Anything? Music I can listen to and still remain a little focused are just, like, instrumentals.
Yeah.
But even then, I start thinking about, like, the instrumentals I would listen to would be, like, video game soundtracks or movie soundtracks.
Mm.
And then I just start thinking about the movie, and then that derails me
there. Fair enough.
And then Sunday I took Archer to a friend, a classmate's science museum birthday party.
Oh, fun.
So dropped him off there. They're remodeling that whole area over there by the science museum. They put in a parking deck.
Yes. I think I've seen that.
Yeah, I hadn't seen it before. So,
when did I last go to the Science Museum? I feel like it was last summer. We took the kids there a couple times.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I've been. But there's a bunch of stuff still under construction.
Yeah, the whole front area is still all gated off. But yeah, there's a parking deck now.
Wow.
Dropped him off there. He had a great time. He just had enough time to go home, eat some chili, play a little bit of video games, and then go back and grab him. And then we went to a friend's house for dinner. And then, you know, we had about a dozen the people there, and we just kind of had we brought mashed potatoes, and we just kind of ate and had the Oscars on just kind of in the background.
Oh yeah, that happened.
Looking all the dresses and stuff, and like oh wow, those sleeves are really poofy, but that was pretty much it. None of us really knew what movies they were talking about. We're like, what's that?
I feel like every year when I watch it, I'm like, it just makes me realize how much I haven't been paying attention.
We're like, oh, that's the thing with that thing and the guy, he does that thing, but none of us had seen them. So like, none of us saw Poor Things. None of us saw The Holdovers.
Never heard of those.
You know, they're Oscar movies.
Oppenheimer
kicked some butt. Yeah. So that I did see.
Yeah.
So that one I was able to say like, okay, yep.
You saw that in IMAX, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's like a, you know,
yeah,
it's like a thing that you can say that you've seen.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it was fine. I don't want to watch it again, but it was fine.
Yeah.
And then, I worked with Archer on a, school project. He has Colonial Day, on Thursday. So everybody, has to present a like a colonial occupation, like blacksmith or whatever. He is a wheelwright, so he needs to make wheels and like kind of have a little station where he sells his wheels for his carriages, and everybody's learning about different occupations so they can talk to the other classmates about like what their job was, how things these things were made.
Cool.
So we needed to construct some wheels for him. So using cardboard and toothpicks and a little bit of hot glue, once I told him he wasn't going to burn himself with it if he was careful, we got it going, came up with a semi-solid design of some wheels. So we've got four done. We need to do two more before Thursday. But yeah, ideating that was a little kind of confusing because he wanted to just use popsicle sticks, but then they wouldn't be actual round. They would be kind of, you know, octagonal. So went with kind of bent cardboard, and it worked out. So got that done. And then finally, I just wanted to mention that I have renewed or reactivated my audible.com subscription to have access to, you know, my old audiobooks. And well, I already had access, but like to the subscription is now active. So I'll have one book a month.
More, yeah.
Because I decided to listen to my favorite book series, The Dark Tower by Stephen King.
Okay.
I've read the whole series twice just with, you know, regular books, but I've never listened to it.
Yeah.
So,
it's a different experience. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I went ahead and downloaded the first book, The Gunslinger. Cool. And
who narrates that?
The same guy that does like so many. He's like one of the, I don't recall his name. I'd know it if I heard it, but he's like one of the most popular.
Best like.
He sounds like an old
fiction narrator.
Sounds like an old dude. Yeah. He did. I know he did American Gods by Neil Gaiman because I listened to that one as well. And he probably did Stardust. No, I think Gaiman did Stardust. Anyway. I definitely heard him before on some other books, but yeah, he's good. He's solid.
Nice.
So, started that and I love it. Dark Tower is so weird. Like I've never been hooked on a book series as much as that one because it's so bizarre. Like so bizarre.
Yeah. What's the plot of like,
well, it's
the,
kind
the
of 10 like
second tour here.
If you combined Arthurian legend,
okay.
Jedis and post-apocalyptic Wild West.
Wow. It's a lot of...
Also,
a lot of genres,
sci-fi, right? Fantasy.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
It is.
Yeah.
It absolutely is. And it's... You've got parallel universes. You've got a multitude of Stephen King's other works mixed in.
Yeah.
Like, it is bizarre. And I love it so much.
Wow.
And you just... I have a terrible memory, so every time I reread it, it's kind of like picking up on new things. So yeah, that's been fun.
Awesome.
Also, like that's the thing. It's like if I'm in the car and I could be listening to music, I'd usually just be doing a podcast or an audiobook. I'd be listening to more musics if podcasts and audiobooks weren't a thing, for
if
sure.
They didn't exist. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yep. But that's pretty much what's been going on for me.
Cool. Yeah, I'll kind of bounce back and forth. I do plenty of podcasts. What I do a lot, I do some podcasts. But I have a YouTube premium thing, so I can listen to YouTube videos like in the background. So there's a lot of videos about like, especially if it's about like science or history or whatever. A lot of times it's like kind of stock B-roll footage in the YouTube video anyway. So it's like, I don't really need to see what's going on.
Yeah.
So I'll like put that on. It's basically like listening to a podcast. So yeah, I do a lot of that.
I've done that from time to time, but I don't have premium. So I just play it on my phone.
Oh,
I just listen to it in the car.
Fair enough.
But I actually, my choices are way more educational than yours are. I will listen to like, you know, top 10 wrestling moves that hurt the worst or things like that, you know.
Nice.
Not to demean your choices. You
know? I have plenty of,
you know, true. But distinguished gentlemen like myself.
I mean, I look like there's like seven different people watching my YouTube feed because if you go into my history, like right now I'm listening to a 60 minutes roundup of different things about artificial intelligence.
Oh,
So that's my current thing. I had, you know, Claude 3, ChatGPT type stuff. And then I've got some like tool hacks. Let's see here. What else? A little bit of Jon Stewart in there. So some politicking type stuff. Various cut ups of like Veep and Curb Your Enthusiasm. A little bit of Arrested Development. Some music stuff. Yeah, I'm all over the place. A lot of John Oliver. Been on a John Oliver kick recently.
This is just all wrestling videos.
Just watched a UFC thing, so you're going to be on a tear.
That's not the same thing. That's
Oh, you're talking like wrestling.
Pro wrestling.
Pro wrestling.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay, fair enough.
And I don't. That's the thing. It's like I don't even watch like I don't watch the weekly wrestling shows. I just
yeah.
I
just watch like recaps. Of
yeah,
things.
I'm yeah. just fascinated by the culture and the
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. That's the industry.
Fun. Yeah, I get it. It's a whole, it's its own world.
Yeah.
Yeah, so for me, I guess I've got like 2 weeks of, 2 weeks of stuff to catch up on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first off, I think we were able to insert some stuff into the last pencast, like barely. That week was crazy with the Lami stuff, the last one that I was in.
Yeah.
That week was totally insane. I genuinely don't remember how much I got into all that, but I had sick kids. I was trying to finish up development reviews, you know, for all my direct reports. We had several people who were like sick and out and, you know, various health things. So we were all covering for a bunch of different people. We had a manufacturer of ours visiting us here from out of the country. We had all the stuff going on with the Lami Dark Lilac stuff. Had a reporter that reached out to me about the Dark Lilac stuff.
We're also prepping for some absences the following week and trying to get a lot done before that.
I was trying to prep for my own absence being gone. So I was like trying to wrap all the stuff up. All the Lami stuff is hitting. It's getting kind of crazy. So that was total madness. So I was able to get all that stuff done basically so that I could be like free and clear for going on this trip. So this trip basically was it was like an e-commerce founder, like people who own e-commerce businesses to be able to connect with each other and just talk about all kinds of stuff that happens in their e-commerce worlds. So, I've been to this conference many times before. It's always wonderful to hear about all the random stuff that people get
up to. Makes you not feel so alone, right?
Absolutely. Cause I talk about fountain pens and it's just like, yeah, sure. Why not?
Yeah.
You know? Other people
and
are selling.
And you probably provide that for other people too.
For
like
sure.
Someone talks about like, hey, I sell, you know, springs that attach to the bottoms of your shoes for, you know, high jumps.
Exactly.
And you're like, yeah, that makes sense. Sounds
absolutely.
Good.
Absolutely. Yeah. In the past, I've met people who specialize in clown makeup. Like
someone's got to do it.
High performance clown makeup. I always have like one new person, like one new company that I
yes,
meet
you
that
do.
I'm just like, yep, that's an out there one. I wouldn't have thought of that. This go around, it was organic chicken feed. So I was like, can't you like buy chicken feed like almost anywhere? And he was like, this is very specific chicken feed for like, you know, people who are, you know, raising, you know, like 8 to 10 chickens, maybe they want to have eggs for their family kind of a thing. They want like organic chickens to have purely organic, truly free range type eggs, stuff like that. And they've got to have like the best organic feed that they can get. So basically bougie chicken feed is what this guy is selling. And I was like, there's a market for everything, I tell you. So that was kind of cool. He was a super cool guy. And it wasn't like, I'm selling things to these suckers. No, he like legitimately is like very high quality feed, all this kind of stuff.
I believe in this. Well, yeah, so, you got to be passionate about 100%. What you do.
Yep. So that was kind of fun. But before I went to the conference, I got up some outdoor activities that I wanted to share because I didn't get a chance to share it because it would have happened on last week's Pencast, but
right.
I wasn't here. So, you know, of course, I'm like, partly I'd like finished up a whole bunch of stuff and I was like, whew. So I'm trying to like help around the house and stuff because I'm going to be gone. But I wasn't leaving until like midday on Tuesday. So on the weekend, I had a little bit of time. So I reached out to my neighbors and, you know, they're slightly older. Did I talk about this on the Pencast? I can't remember if I did or not. But I had some neighbors that had a bunch of trees cut down and they had all the stumps were left over.
You did not. You told me about this.
I think I told you about it. Yeah.
And
I think I talked about it on the Pencast.
I alluded to it on the last Pencast
because
somebody was talking about, because Brian said, I don't actually have buckets of rocks though. That's one difference between me and him. And then I said, spoiler alert, Brian got some rocks.
I got a rock bucket story.
All right. So you go ahead.
This folds into that. so yes, I had, you know, my neighbors, I'm trying to be like good Samaritan, good neighbor kind of a thing. You know, my neighbors are older. They have a bunch of stumps in their backyard that they're walking past all the time. I don't want them tripping over stumps and all that kind of stuff. So I have a tractor with a stump grinder attachment to it. So I offered to go and help grind up some stumps. And, you know, that's what I did. I went and did it and it was awesome. I love grinding stumps. It was a lot of fun.
I mean, it's so...
It's so, like, so gratifying.
But it's like totally necessary chaos and destruction.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then there's no other way to do it. Like,
no.
The proper way I've is tried. To just completely destroy, mangle, and maul it.
Yeah, that's actually the most effective way to do it.
Yeah, and so like that's mm-hmm. like what else is there where, and you don't really have to clean up either. Like,
no, not really.
You just kind of leave it there, and you know,
just like kind of rake it out, and it'll all break down and turn into.
So it's like fertilizer. What else can you just completely obliterate and just can be like, all right, there we go.
Yeah,
all done.
It's pretty fun. Power washing, maybe it's kind of like that.
Power
washing, you just get the blasted away, and you're like, all right, everything that I just did is just going to soak into the ground or whatever.
Yeah,
it's gratifying like that. So I ground up. They had 17 stumps, and I ground up all of them in about.
Do you know how much that
would
have cost?
Probably a lot, but
yeah,
I was like, well, I got the stump grinder. Let's help them out. So that was pretty fun. So, you know, they kind of mentioned to me that like there was one of the stumps, like one of the last ones there, you know, the guy was like, you know, kind of messing around the stump and digging and picking at all this stuff. And I was like, what is he doing? Is he like pulling weeds around the stump? Like, it doesn't
matter. I'm going to kill those,
bro. I'm going to grind it up. So then I kind of get over to him and he's like, yeah, he's like, I forgot there was a giant pile of rocks here, like that I put here like 20 years ago when this tree was like a sapling. And he's like, I kind of forgot about it. So it's basically like this giant pile of rocks that's like buried underneath the dirt.
That would hurt your grinder around. Right?
Yes, that would be very bad for the grinder. Yeah, because these are like chunks of granite, like kind of a thing, like landscaping rocks. I'm talking like
not gravel,
like huge things. Yeah, not little bits of gravel, which would also not be good for, but I'm talking like these rocks are like 30 pounds a piece, probably.
Oh,
big old rocks. So we go in there and we start digging them all out, and I want to get that stump. So we got that taken care of. And then he mentions to me, he's like, yeah, we moved these rocks here from our last house that we had. It was so heavy and took forever. He's like, I haven't used them for anything. He's like, you want these rocks? Because I'm not using them for anything. And I was like, I like rocks. Yeah, I could probably find a use for these giant, you know, because like rocks like that, like. So I've just recently bought some gravel. So the cheapest way you can get gravel is like the smallest, tiniest rocks, because that's like the stuff that's left over from when they cut the big rocks. So the bigger the rocks you buy, the more expensive they get.
It makes sense.
Right? So these like nicer like landscape rocks, they can get pretty expensive. And he had a lot of them. Like it was deceiving. It was like, it seemed like kind of just a little pile and we were kind of digging around. It was a ton. And then he had like another pile kind of in the back of his property. He was like, I've had that pile of rocks. I stare at it all the time. I just want it. He's like, it's too much work to get rid of. If you want that, you can have those too. And I was like, I got a tractor with a big old bucket on it.
Oh my gosh.
I can fill my bucket with rocks.
Oh my God.
So I hauled probably 10 bucket loads of rocks.
Now we're talking about like the long, narrow bucket, right? Not like the scoopy bucket.
No. This is a 5 foot wide bucket that can hold about 1,000 pounds.
Oh my God.
I filled that thing at least 10 times.
10,000 pounds?
Yeah.
Of rocks?
Maybe more, yeah.
That you felt like you needed.
Yeah. I took pictures of it because I couldn't tell. I'm not a like rock expert, but there were some that were clearly like some kind of granite. Like I could tell they were like harder, nicer rocks. And then there was some that were more like some kind of a slate or something, like they were like breaking apart. But there you go. There's my two piles of rocks that I kind of sorted out.
Did you clean them?
For reference there. No, the rain's going
to
clean them.
I was about to say,
glove. So you can get like a perspective on how big those rocks
Good
are.
God.
They're big rocks.
They actually don't look, they don't look like they've been buried under the ground for a while. They actually look
Yeah, I mean, rocks
pretty
will,
good.
Rocks will last a while, you know. They're, you know,
I'm just, they don't look dirty.
Yeah, like they're kind of dirty, but you know, they'll rinse off, you know, with the rain.
Yeah,
but yeah, they're like, I mean, literally, like I don't even know how many decades they've had these rocks, but they're perfect. Oh, they're just as good as the day they were. Yeah. What am I gonna do with them? I can do anything with them.
Like
you
what?
Never know
though?
What you can do with a pile of rocks.
Like, give me an example.
You know, if I wanted to do like a little fire pit, you know, I could make a little fire pit of rocks. I could do, you know, if I had like a little retaining wall, or if I wanted to like, you know, on my driveway, I've got like a little, you know, a little pipe that goes under, a little culvert pipe that goes under. Mm-hmm. It's just like bare concrete, you know, if I wanted to like stack them up and make like a decorative pile of rocks.
Okay.
As like the
so
head,
they're
the
mostly,
head wall.
They're mostly decorative.
Yeah. They're just decorative kind of things,
gotcha.
You know, or if I just need some like dead weight, you know, I just have a big, heavy rocks. Like it's easy to like. I've got a ballast box on the back of the tractor. I can fill it with big rocks. You know, that's easier than like filling it with sand or something.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so like.
And those things scoop okay?
No.
Okay, I didn't think
they
so.
Didn't scoop great. I had to basically put them all in the bucket by hand.
Oh no!
Yeah.
So how are you alive?
I don't know.
Golly, see those.
I do that kind of stuff a lot. So.
It's like when you go to a candy store and you're like, oh yeah, let me get some gummy worms. And you're like, ah,
you're
oh,
like
God.
Trying to scoop them.
These are just.
That's pretty much what it was like. I was right? trying. I like kept trying to scoop and scoop and scoop, and I could get like two rocks.
Yeah, you get the jelly beans that are just like delightful, but then you get like you know gummy frogs. And you're like, oh come on, this is
Yeah, that's kind of what this was like.
Gummy sharks, don't even bother scooping those things.
No, you're just messing. So, yep. So I just moved a ton of rocks.
Oh,
so
my
grinding
God.
Grinding stumps and moving buckets of rocks.
And true to form, I'm sure Rachel just kind of was like, okay, when you said I needed, I just brought home 10,000 pounds of boulders.
Yep. Great. She enters into this state where it's just kind of like, it's like, it just like in one ear, kind of out the other, just like, a wave of disinterest just washes over her. And it's kind of like whatever I'm saying in that state is just kind of like suspended reality for her.
Yeah.
Like it's she, you know.
The outside world where Brian just
where I will
builds things and digs things.
Yep.
And chops down things and then buries the things that he chops down.
I'm basically like a toddler out there just playing around in the dirt, moving rocks around and, you know, but I don't know. Got to help a neighbor. In multiple ways, because they didn't want the rocks anymore.
That was
anymore.
Super, super nice.
Yeah,
by the
trying
way.
To be like nice, that, and that, I got rewarded with piles of rocks. What more could you want?
Yay!
And I got exercise, too, and I got to enjoy the weather.
Yeah.
Got to spend time with my neighbor. You know,
that is awesome.
Fun.
No, that says, honestly, it does say a lot about you, like, going out of your way to do that. Like, I think a lot of people would not.
Trying to do the neighborly thing, you know?
That's really cool. I don't think that I would have done that. I'd like to think that I would, but I don't know.
Yeah, and I'm like, I live in a pretty rural area, so like it would be very easy for you to just like never talk to them.
Yeah.
But you know, they're friendly. They've got a couple of dogs, a couple of little Pomeranian little yip-yapper things.
Yep.
Like every time we go to get our mail, these things are like, and it's like, we've lived there for 12 years now.
Those things used to be wolves.
They used to be, that's right. I guess all dogs used to be wolves at some point. Yeah, they must have been wolves a long time ago. Right. Those little yipper things—they probably weigh like 10 pounds.
Oh like, yeah, they're like all fluff.
Yeah, they're pretty cute though, but they just like they have no chill. It's like every time,
a lot of little dogs are just completely free of chill.
Yeah, they're like you can tell as we're like walking, like we're going to walk, you know, and you can see them at their front like picture window, and the both dogs are just like,
yeah, I'm gonna get you.
And
I'm like, gonna get you.
It must be so loud inside.
You're looking at
those
walls here.
Yeah. Anyway, so that was fun. So that was my. That was my fun little adventure leading up to my conference trip. Let's see here. So I did make a note. So I went on this conference thing. So that was like Tuesday. This was in New Orleans. So it was a couple of legs of plane-ness happening. Going down was fine. No delays. Plane rides were great. Coming back was a little bumpier. But I got down there. Basically, it was like 3.5 days of listening to people talk about their businesses and then talking at and listening to other people talk about their businesses. So, you know, not too much to recap on that front, but I did get to do some other activities that were there. Oh, some other interesting companies. I mentioned the organic chicken feed guy. Somebody else sells, I'll call it cheeky underwear. So like, you know, sort of higher end underwear, mainly geared towards men that have specific themes to them that lean into the underwearness, if you can catch my drift.
Okay.
So getting to hear about how they market.
Fun.
Those types of things when maybe it's not appropriate in all
how
places
exciting.
To be marketing.
Yeah, that must be a unique challenge.
It is.
Should we do a collaboration?
Whoo, you know, there would be a natural, you know.
There's plenty of pen in
you. Puns that you can be making, yeah. So I'm gonna move right off that topic. Somebody else that sells slime, you know, like the kind of slime you mix together.
That's
like really cool looking stuff.
Now, that's easy to market.
Oh, 100%. Somebody else that sells money bags to like banks and casinos, like literally.
Oh, those like heavy canvas ones with the
all
zippers?
All types of bags.
Oh, those
they
are
have like
cool.
35,000 different SKUs. Oh. Like just every type of bag. That you
those
can
are awesome.
Imagine.
I've been like searching for coins on eBay before and like some of them come in like bags. I'm like, I just want that bag.
Yeah. If you ever want to know anything about any type of bag, I know Mr. Moneybags.
Mr. Moneybags.
That's what
he's
called, yeah. Somebody else that ships halal meat, so like, you know, especially, you know, prepared meat for the, like, the Muslim community, and just learning what it's like to have to ship a perishable product. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that is so much more complicated than shipping pens.
Yeah. Every time you've gone to one of these things and come back, you've both been educated about new things and then relieved that we don't have to do a lot of things.
Yes.
Like, you know, like accounts receivable and stuff like that, or
yeah,
or accounts payable. Which I don't know, which one don't we have?
We have plenty of accounts payable.
Right, we don't have accounts receivable
because it's all, like, yeah, you buy it on the website, you pay with your credit card, or it doesn't ship.
Yeah.
Other people, like, there's a lot of people that sell like big box stores, like they might distribute their product to, like, you know, Walmart or whatever. Well, they have to extend terms to Walmart, so they have to not only buy all the stuff, buy a huge amounts of inventory, then they got to sell it in Walmart, and then Walmart waits, I don't know, months to actually pay you for it. So you're floating all that money in the meantime, and it's like
horrifying.
You don't have any of that to deal with. What else? Somebody else that sells like fire blankets, like fire safety gear and stuff like that.
I've seen ads for those.
Crazy. A lot of people selling like jewelry, dog treats, dog toys, that type of stuff.
The pet industry is massive.
A lot of different pet industries, cosmetics, you know, all kinds of stuff. Somebody else that specializes in like hair coloring stuff for men, but it's like a safer organic like kind of hair coloring for men. So like that, like really specific kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So just getting to talk to these people and like, how did they get into that stuff? And just all kinds of cool stories that people have.
It's usually do you think they could do a 2-hour podcast about their products?
A lot of these people.
That'd be fascinating.
They probably could. Yeah. Yeah. There's, everybody there has got a really interesting story, which is why I love going to these types of things. But it was in New Orleans. So when we weren't talking and, you know, doing all that kind of stuff, I did get to do a couple of fun things. One of them is, it's called a second line parade. So it's basically this is something kind of unique to New Orleans. You can hire a band of musicians and you get like the police to close down a street and you participate in your own little parade down like Canal Street and stuff like that.
So are there parades like hourly?
All the time. There's parades all the time in the city. It's like part of their culture. Well, they'd have like, you know, they're probably most known for like their funerals. They have like the New Orleans funerals with the parades and music. And it's
so
like,
it's not just a weekend thing.
No. I mean, we did it at like, I don't know, it was like 4:30 on a
Wednesday. So you had a, Wednesday you had a personal parade?
We had a personal parade for our little group and it was pretty dang fun. Like, you know, and it was like not, I mean, we started out in some side streets and then we went down Canal Street, which is like, it's like a 4 or 6 lane road or something with a trolley in the middle of it and all that kind of stuff. And the police shut it down and we're like marching down and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, wow, I feel bad for the people in the city, but I guess you kind of know what you sign up for if you do that. But it was pretty fun. So,
you just walked and waved. Yeah.
Just walked and waved and, you know, everybody's got their like phones out and we're all, you know, doing the thing. So that was pretty fun. That was pretty cool. How often you get to be in your own parade? Fun fact though, I actually marched in marching band on tenor sax and sousaphone.
So you probably felt like you were missing something.
Well, it, like,
where's my horn?
I don't often think about like what it's like to march in a parade, but getting to do that again, I was like, oh my gosh, I was like flashing back so hard.
Yeah, you either needed a sousaphone or like a pretend rifle, right?
Yeah, I've done plenty of that. Yeah. So like just remembering that, I'm like, oh my gosh, I did this so much in college. Yeah. Like, yeah, that was a whole thing. And I kind of like got to remember that.
I know how to march. Get out of here. Let me show y'all how it's done.
Marching sousaphone was pretty dang fun.
Why didn't you bring a Goulet Pins flag?
You know,
you twirl
that
around.
Know. It was a surprise. Ugh. It was a surprise. They just told us to like show up at a certain time before our like dinner event.
Oh my God. And then like, we're doing a parade.
We show up. Yeah, exactly. So that was part of the experience. It was like, what the heck is going on? Wow. And we're like all marching down and everybody was having a good time. So that was fun. Also got to do a little outdoor activity, a little adventure activity, they like to call it.
Wrestling gators?
No, but one of the activities was kayaking, and there were absolutely gators in the water. Like, they saw, like, dozens of gators. Oh, it was, like, a whole thing. A lot of people were kind of, like, freaking.
I love kayaking.
They're, like, warned ahead of time. But, like, for sure, there were gators, like, up in the waters, like, with the kayakers. Man. And I was like, I don't know that I'd have the guts for that.
But Rachel would.
She would want nothing to do with
it. No, she would be upset if you did it.
Oh, yeah, probably.
Oh, yeah.
She's okay. Like, I don't do too much crazy stuff.
Right, but yeah.
I probably just wouldn't have told her. but my activity that I got to do was blacksmithing.
Oh.
Which is like, come on. And that event filled up quick too. So I like got right on it as soon as it opened up.
Yeah, that's got your name on it.
Yeah. And it was awesome.
Oh, I'm sure. That's like right up your alley.
Yeah, it felt very familiar. I've done metalworking and welding and stuff like that, but never like.
And you like hammers.
I love hammers. I did. I got exposure to a whole new world of hammers.
So you don't have a blacksmithing hammer.
I don't, but that might change because I really enjoyed it.
I've gone down a YouTube rabbit hole before with like, you know, backyard crucibles and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, aluminum smelting and stuff like that. Like, it looks like you don't need a whole lot. You can do it with kind of a minimal sort of setup.
That's what I'm saying. This setup was pretty... It was pretty basic. Like, it was essentially done in, like, a garage. Like, definitely something pretty feasible to do. And the whole thing was, like, it was a small forge. So, it was, like, maybe this big around. Mm-hmm. So, we were just heating up small pieces. And the whole thing was propane powered. So, it was, like, a propane tank with this forge that was, like, this big. And I asked the guy, I was, like, how long does it take for this thing to heat up? He was, like, 5-10 minutes.
Oh, wow.
And I was, like, okay. So, that's not crazy.
Mm-mm.
So... I haven't gone pricing out forges yet. He was like, yeah, you can even make your own forge.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a big deal. But he was like, honestly, they're so cheap. You can basically
Another thing that...
Well, like, that's the whole setup right there.
Oh,
so, like,
yeah.
A tank and a little forge.
Oh.
You need, like, a bucket of water. And that's it. That's the whole thing.
Wow.
Very simple.
I've seen even more basic versions than that.
Yeah. But then I got to make a bottle opener, and I got to take it home. So that was the thing that I made. So it, like, shows all the different steps. Of, like, I started with just, like, a raw stock of metal.
How'd you get the hole in there?
You got to punch it. You got to heat it up. And then you have this big, like, it's almost like a pickaxe. And you, like, set it on there and you slam it with a hammer and you punch through the metal.
Oh, my gosh. I bet you had so much fun just, like, hammering hot metal.
It was... Like, it was awesome.
Well, yeah. Well, like,
so primal.
This also, like, you know, kind of probably goes back to your... woodworking route because it's not like
very similar kind of a vibe.
It's not like welding where you're just kind of like joining and attaching. This is creating something from nothing.
Yeah,
like absolutely. You do with woodworking. You have a
blank
thing and you're creating a new shape from a completely blank. Oh wow, that's so, cool.
Yeah. And you like put it in there and it gets red hot and you
gotta
handle it with the tongs and you gotta hold it in place and you used all the parts of the anvil and I'm like learning like why the anvil has these random holes in the horn and
Brian K is super knowledgeable about that stuff
100%.
Too.
Oh, yeah. It's right up his alley.
He was telling me the other day about like the point of quenching.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I just thought it was like to cool it off. He's like, no. That's totally different.
It's to treat it.
Yeah.
Well, it depends if you're doing it in oil or if you're doing it in water.
That's what he was saying.
Yep. Oil quenching. That's a whole different thing. So I got to bring home my little
my
bottle opener that I made. So it's not the most beautiful thing in the world.
Wait, does this have like an intentional texture on
it? Yeah.
So you did this like as a design?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. It almost looks like diamond plate or something.
That's
like
what I was going for. Yeah, I did like a little crosshatch.
Well, there you
thing.
Go.
So I used like a hammer that had like a kind of a chisel like edge to it, and while it was kind of hot, I was just like slamming it in there and creating that texture.
Did they have a bottle for you to use it on? Nice.
Yeah. They gave us a bottle after we were done working all the tools, but I just had a ginger beer, which is not alcoholic.
Nice.
And it was very refreshing.
Awesome.
It was pretty hot in there. I'm not gonna lie. But yeah, it's kind of cool. So it's like I got a trinket, and now I'm like, oh man, this is really not that hard to do. So,
you could get yourself a really cool like leather apron to wear.
100%.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
I feel like I'd have to grow a beard. You know, it's just like that fits the vibe.
Absolutely.
But it was fun because I was talking to the guy, you know, because it was like, you know, a guy probably our age or whatever that was doing it, and that's like his business. Like, because he was saying like, you know, he went to school for industrial design and. His wife ended up moving to New Orleans for a job opportunity. And he was like, yeah, there's not that many jobs in New Orleans for what I do. So he's like, I just started doing the blacksmithing thing full time. So there's a lot of like wrought iron and, you know, stuff like that, like the railings and stuff like that and like the French Quarter. So he does a lot of that repair type work and he teaches classes and does workshops and stuff like that. So I got to talk to the guy. He's originally from Pittsburgh. But I asked him, like, how'd you get into blacksmithing? He was like, well, when I was a kid, I went to Colonial Williamsburg and saw them forging, you know, wagon wheel type stuff and all that. And he's like, I just thought it was really cool. And then I learned how to do it. And I was like, hey, what's up, Williamsburg? He's like down the road from us.
There we go.
So there you go. You never know. You never know what it could kick off in the future. So
what are the odds of you getting a little set up?
Oh, I don't know. We'll see.
5 out of 10.
Look into it. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not going to say I didn't have like as much of a... no pun intended, burning desire to do it as like I did with welding. Because welding is like very practical and I really like that. But I definitely, like I have a press brake. I have a, you know, hydraulic press. I have some things that like I definitely need to bend metal. And I have definitely like had opportunities when welding to like heat things up with like a propane torch, like to get it red hot, to bend it and that kind of stuff. So I've definitely had purposes for doing that before, but I've never like had that little forge. And I'm like,
All right. Here's what you could do.
Okay.
You could make an axe from scratch.
Oh, I could.
Beginning to end.
Yeah.
You could do the wood handle.
Mm-hmm.
You could do
yeah.
the head. 100%
theoretically.
Your own axe.
Yes.
How cool would that be,
Brian?
That would
be incredibly cool.
Right?
Yeah, that'd be really cool.
I think you need to do it.
The only problem is, so I have run into this problem with welding too. So I have a woodworking shop, which is like sawdust and wood floor, wood walls. Metal, like hot molten metal, doesn't jive so well in that space. So I don't.
It's got a wood floor?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah, because that's like great for woodworking. Like it's really good for your back. It stays warm. Like that is ideal for woodworking.
Uh-huh.
And I also have like the dust collection stuff running through the floor. So wood is like really good for that. But you really can't do any blacksmithing in a woodworking shop. You need like concrete floors, metal walls, that kind of a thing. So I don't quite have a space where that makes a whole lot of sense.
I think you need a blacksmithing shed.
I don't know. A shed would be a potential option to do it. So you see how this is quickly going to get out of control.
You're talking to the wrong guy. I'm just going
to
keep on encouraging you.
It's easy to say.
It gets exciting.
What I could see, so like with welding, the way I do it is, you know, I basically weld outside. So that's how I can make it happen. So it's you can definitely forge things outside.
Yeah.
So I just got to weigh out like, how much equipment would I have to haul in and out? How much would I actually do this kind of thing? So I don't know. We'll see. I might.
And you could also get it. You could also get it done like just under a covering.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Yeah. Like a carport.
Carport. Or I was going to say that.
I do have a carport.
There you go.
Oh, that's true. I never even thought about doing
well,
it out
at
there.
Well, that's what the guy at Jamestown has. The Williamsburg guy has a room, you know, with a stone floor. But the Jamestown guy, he's just got a little covering. It's open on all four sides.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, not one side. One side has like the brick chimney sort of deal, but
open
on three sides.
Yeah, but if I did a propane thing, that would be the way to do it. All right. Well, we to be continued.
Yeah.
To be continued. We'll see. But I had a lot of fun doing that. and then it was very interesting being in New Orleans because I'm trying to observe Lent, which means I don't eat red meat on Fridays. I was definitely there on Friday and I was like, all right, I'm not like super, super strict about it, but I was like, I'm going to try.
Yeah.
So guess where we had lunch on Friday as a group?
Steakhouse?
Fogo de Chão.
I've heard of that. We've had one of those around
here,
don't
we? It's a Brazilian steakhouse.
Oh.
Essentially a parade of meat constantly being brought to the table. And I was like, all right, I'm being put to the test here. We'll see. But I was like, I've had really nice steakhouses and stuff before. It's fine. I'll forego.
Did you really?
So I was eating like butternut squash soup.
Did you really?
Yeah, I didn't have any.
Oh my God. You love those places.
I do. And it was good. But it was also lunch. And I was like, I'm going to eat way too much too.
Okay.
So
yeah.
That made it a little easier.
Okay.
But
because I've been to one of those restaurants with you.
Oh.
Like,
oh, and I always feel sick afterwards because, again, I'll eat too many Cheerios. You're going to have some phenomenal meat. Of course, I'm going to overeat
that. But it's all you got to get your money's worth.
I know. But this was like part of the package or whatever. So, it was like sunk costs. Like I've already paid, you know, whatever. So I was like, all right, that's fine. I can withgo. But what they did have there that I don't remember having at like Texas Day Brazil or something, they had this like fried, I don't think it was fried. It was like a baked cheese, some kind of cheese. It was phenomenal. And they like drizzle it with honey. And I was like, dang, I had like 9 pieces of that cheese and a lot of soup and a lot of veggies. I ate a lot of roasted veggies.
Nice.
So I definitely didn't get my money's worth, but it's all good. And then it was also funny because I'd never been to Bourbon Street, which is like the like party central of New Orleans. And everybody was going out. The whole event was over. And it was like, all right. I was like, because I've been to New Orleans before. I was like, I can't remember if I went to Bourbon Street. I think I did, but it was during the day. There's not that much going on. So this was at night, a Friday night going to Bourbon Street. And I was like, oh, I definitely have not been here before because I would have remembered this. Now, it wasn't like Mardi Gras, like people on the balconies showing inappropriate stuff or whatever. But it's basically just lined with bars and gentlemen's clubs.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, okay.
Memorable.
Like, yeah, it was memorable. And I was like, I'm definitely like the oldest person on this whole street. Like it was all younger people. And I was like, where are your parents? And I'm like, I couldn't get up to my room. So I had my backpack. Because like I had to finish dinner and all that kind of stuff. And then I was wearing like my cargo shorts and all this kind of stuff. And I was like super dad mode.
Nice.
You know, while I'm carrying my water bottle with the representing myself there. And I was like, yep, I definitely stick out on this street.
Nice.
But I stayed there for like an hour. I didn't go in anywhere. I was just in the street.
You absorb the environment.
So loud. Like every place was blasting music. And I was like, I'm really feeling my age a little bit here. And I'm okay with that. I wasn't drinking. I wasn't doing any of that stuff. And I was like, yeah, I have no desire to be a part of this at all.
Yeah.
But it was just like nice to like see it and be like, yep, that's not my scene.
Yeah.
But now I can say I've been to Bourbon Street.
Yeah. I'll just go to Port Orleans at Disney.
Yeah, exactly. If you know what it felt like, remember Pleasure Island back when that was a thing? They used to have like all these different like dance clubs or different themes.
No, I went to the only dance club I've ever been to was actually at Universal. There was like an area of that.
Okay.
And it was awful.
Yeah.
So loud.
Yeah, it was like that, except
panic.
So it reminded me of that. I've literally been to one club in my life with Rachel. We went with my sister once. We were already married at that point, and we went in. It was so smoky. This is before they had all the smoking bans and stuff. And we were just like, this is gross.
Yeah.
Let's leave. And we left, and we smelled like smoke for the next 24
hours. Not my jam either.
Like, yeah, okay, I'm done.
Yeah.
And then last but not least, I mentioned to you how I was thinking about getting the video game.
Yes, the trucking game.
Mud Runners, Snow Runners, which is a follow-up game made by the same people. As luck would have it, I was thinking about getting this anyway. On my first leg of the flight going down to New Orleans, there's a guy sitting next to me on the plane that had a Steam Deck and was playing SnowRunners.
No.
So I got to see it in the wild, and I got to talk to the guy about the game.
Oh my God.
I was just like, oh my God, is that SnowRunners? And he's like, yeah. You know, it's a middle-aged dude like me. You know,
oh my God.
So I was just like, how is that game?
Tell me about it.
I was like, how is the game? He's like, it's pretty much exactly what you would think that it is. And I was like, that's all that I wanted to be.
Nice.
So I bought it.
Yes.
I bought it. I haven't played SnowRunners yet because Mud Runners came out first.
So do you just like, are you like delivering stuff or is it racing or?
It's definitely not racing.
Okay.
You just have, you know what it's like? It's like what I get up to, but it's real time. Like it drives. You're like.
So is it construction equipment or is it like a truck?
It's like it's kind of like logging equipment. Like you have to take this vehicle and it's almost out of gas. So you got to go drive it to the fuel station, which is like in the middle of the woods. And then you have to go bring this trailer to the lumber mill. That's like your mission.
That's amazing.
There's no music. It's just you're driving it real time, which is like through the mud.
Is it like cartoony or like really realistic?
No, it's a simulator.
So
it's
very realistic.
So it's sort of like, you know, like the Microsoft Flight Simulator.
Yeah.
It's like that.
Oh.
So it's like when I was a kid, I would be like, I would want to play Microsoft Flight Simulator. I'd be like, all right, I'm flying. And then I'd be like, now what do I do?
Yeah.
And you're just like, no, you just have to wait for like an hour until you get to your destination.
Yeah.
And you have to like watch out for the weather and all this kind
of
stuff. It's literally just like that. So you're like driving through it and you're like, oh man, it's kind of muddy here. Let me put on my differential lock so that I can get better traction. Oh, there's a little bit of a hill. I'm kind of slipping. Let me winch onto that tree. It's literally like
that. So do you have like a little dude that comes out and does the winch and you get back in? Like, do you
No,
play
it's a little more. It's a little more.
You play as the vehicle, not as like the person.
Yeah. There is a dude in the thing, but you're not like, it's not like, you know, a first person game where you're following a human.
Gotcha.
You're like in the truck. But like, you know, one of the things was like, there's a challenge. I had to like drive this truck that had like a crane on the back of it. And it's like, you have to drive to these different houses that have a log in the yard and you got to pick up the log and put it onto the back.
You have to go over your neighbors and grind some stumps.
Yeah. But it's so funny because as I was doing it, I was, you know, going, I'm like, oh man, you know,
nice.
Find the field that has flowers in it, you know?
That is amazing.
It's pretty lame, you know,
for beautiful.
A video game, but it's like,
beautiful.
It's just it's me in a video game.
That is
I
marvelous.
Feel like I'm working outside.
That is so marvelous.
In a video game.
I'm so glad that you found that.
Yeah. So like one of the missions, I had to bring some logs to a lumber mill. That was my whole mission.
Excellent.
So I drove all the way across the whole map through the mud and everything. It took me like 15 minutes. And then I found out I needed a trailer to fit the logs. So I was like, guess I'm going back to my garage to get my trailer. And then I go back there and then I have to fuel up because I used all my fuels and I brought some logs and it was like, well, that's half the logs you need. So I had to go all the way back and fuel up again and on the way. And I came back and I made it almost to the lumber mill. And then I was on this like rickety little crossing bridge type thing, like what I would build. And my back tire slipped off and I lost my logs on the creek. And my vehicle was like on its side. And I was like, I literally don't even know what to do now. But it was like, you lost all your logs. And I was like, it takes like 15 minutes to drive back and forth. And I was like, dang it. So I just shut it off.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. It's like, I can't get frustrated because, like, that's what the game is.
Yeah. It's like, anyway. I should have known better.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
But it's fun. It's very realistic. So.
That's cool.
I'm having a good time with it.
But I'm so glad.
It's.
Do you think you're going to need to buy a second Steam Deck now?
No.
Okay.
It's fine.
Okay.
I'll just play it after Joseph goes to bed. And
gotcha.
I'm not going to be, like, playing it all the time because it's, honestly, it's kind of frustrating because it's very realistic,
yeah.
Which is, real life is frustrating. So,
yes.
Anyway. So that's what I've been up to.
Magical.
Yep.
Thank you.
There you go.
I'm glad you got that game.
And it's an Xbox game that's adapted for the Steam Deck.
Oh, okay.
So part of my frustration is like the instructions are saying which button to press. I'm like, that's not a button on the Steam Deck.
Oh.
So I'm like, I don't know which button I need to operate the crane. So I'm sure it'll get a little easier once I like actually figure out what to press and all that.
Oh.
Yeah. That's kind of how the Steam Deck goes. It's like a handheld computer, basically.
Right.
So sort of like if you're using like an emulator or something like that.
Right.
You sometimes have to like adopt you know, certain things for like specialized buttons. And there's a lot of specialized buttons in this game because you have like cranes to operate and various things like that. So anyway, this is boring and like, we can stop talking about it. That's what I'm up to. So I think we'll pretty much wrap this thing up now because we've gotten to the end. So here we go. All right, I want to thank you all for watching. Please leave us some feedback. Let us know how we're doing. Ask us some questions so we can keep it going. We don't have a break for a while, so we'll keep the show going for a bit.
Nope.
And then, yeah, check out GouletPens.com for fountain pen, ink, and paper needs. And like and subscribe to YouTube, Instagram, all that stuff. And I have a random fun fact about something that I learned in New Orleans, as a matter of fact. It's kind of gross, so if you're sensitive to, you know, gross things related to burials, just go ahead and sign off now.
Can't be worse than the Cheerio story.
It's a little worse. It's a little grosser. It's a little more graphic, but I have to explain it because it's very fascinating. So this is like, I learned some interesting culture related to New Orleans. So they have like the New Orleans funerals, that kind of thing. So I learned about perhaps, I don't know if this is like just an adopted historical reference to a common colloquialism or whether it was the true origin of it. But have you ever heard the expression, wouldn't touch something with a 10-foot pole?
Of course.
I never knew where that came from, and I heard perhaps where it might have come from or at least been adopted to. So in New Orleans, it is the city is below sea level. So it's the water table is very high.
Yep.
Things are very wet all the time. And so they learned in the mid-1800s when they were like really establishing the city and stuff that if they were to bury people underground because the water table gets really high, people often didn't stay underground.
Yeah.
And that created a problem.
Yeah. Floaters.
Some floaters, yeah. So they have to treat burials differently in New Orleans because of that. And so, you know, that all fits into part of the culture and stuff like that. But basically the way that they end up burying people is they have to do it above ground. So they have these things called a columbarium. So it's, you know, essentially like how you have the like pyramids in Egypt.
Like a mausoleum.
It's like a mausoleum. Yeah. But so it's above ground. But, you know, it's so humid. It's like a subtropical climate there. Bodies will decompose more rapidly there. So essentially what they do is they'll have, you know, they might have like a mausoleum for one specific person, but oftentimes they would have it for a whole family. So you would essentially have this giant, like kind of concrete structure or whatever that's above ground. And you would place, you know, you might cremate the body or you might just put the whole body in there. And you would seal it up, leave it there for a year. And after a year, essentially most of the body would be decomposed and you'd just kind of be left with the bones. Well, they would leave it sealed up for a year plus one day. That's like a thing that they do. And then when they need to put somebody else in there, they have to push all the bones to the back and it kind of drops off to the back. So you would use, of course, the longest pole possible to do that. And I guess a lot of them were like kind of like a 10-by-10 structure, like a 10-foot long. So the 10-foot pole thing became like the pole that you needed to like push the old like decayed like body parts so that you could make room for the next person that needed to be buried in there. And apparently that's perhaps maybe some of where that expression came from. Wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole because it's super gross.
Nice.
And you don't want anything to do with that. So
Ray Stans from Ghostbusters says 10-meter cattle prod.
Okay.
Never seen a cattle prod that long, but
it seems excessively long for a cattle prod.
Insanely
like 100 feet.
Yeah, you need to have like a wheel on that thing.
Yeah, that'd be a little ridiculous. But
honestly, I think I'm less bothered by that than I am this Cheerio story. I think that
Fair enough.
That, you know, but, you know, to each their own. But yeah, no, it ain't bad. But I have heard the story of the floaters. I was aware of that.
Yeah, yeah, that was yeah. So it's an
fascinating.
Interesting city. Yeah, okay. So little things you learn.
Did you get to go to any cemeteries or anything like that?
I didn't,
because I know they can look pretty cool. I know
that's what I've heard. Yeah, I actually heard about that fact from somebody that did a cemetery tour.
Because there's, like, you know, in Savannah and Charleston mm-hmm. and New Orleans, they have some really fascinating, a lot of ironwork and stuff like that. Yeah, really beautiful cemeteries.
Definitely. Yeah, I think it has to do with, like, the climate and stuff like that, and really the culture cool. and who settled there and stuff like that. So, yeah, pretty fascinating.
Cool.
And I also tried to find a music shop to see if I could get my hands on a Barry Sax.
Oh.
But I looked up a few different places and it didn't seem like, and they were also not that close to where I was staying. So I would have had to, like,
get how Uber close are you to your practicing goal? How's that going?
I have 73 hours left.
Oh my gosh.
So I've done 20, whatever that is, 27 hours so far.
That's impressive.
I'm getting there.
You're going to be halfway before you know
I'm
it.
I'm getting there. I mean, I'm on track for like mid-June at this point. So that'll come up quick, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm on
it. So at this point, you don't know where you're going to buy it from?
I've got a few different places I'm looking. Cool. Yeah. But it's so crazy because there's like some that are like way too affordable seeming, that are like, you know, obviously like direct from China kind of a thing. And I'm like, oh, I don't know about that. But I'm also like, I'm not going to, like, I'm just playing it for myself.
Does it matter? Yeah.
I don't know. So I'm in that process, sort of like when you're with pens and you're like, why is there such a price disparity? Does it matter? What matters to me? You know, so I'm in the process of learning all that. But, you know, we'll see.
Very cool.
Got a few things I'm keeping my eye on, but that's what
that's exciting.
Got some time to figure it out. So. Anyway, I hope you all enjoyed this. Another long, nice long pencast for you. So thanks for watching. It's good to be back. And, you know, we'll see you around. Right on.